Who goes west when the south is best? The witch kicks sense at the southwest end. It's bigger and it's better. Do your shopping at your leisure, because I got it all together at the witch kicks center. Make for your mother, or a spring for your brother, or a ring for your lover, or a music center. Who goes west when the south is best? The witch kicks sense at the southwest end. You can get a Spanish bed, you can get a double bed, and you'll get them all together at the witch kicks center. Skirts and tops and sprouts and chop in bigger, better shops at the witch kicks center. Who goes west when the south is best? Witch Gift Center's the southwest end. It's bigger and it's better. Do your shopping at your leisure, because they've got it all together at the Witch Gift Center.
The Witch Gift Center, Croydon. A great place to shop.
Cucina Italiana
is a leading name in stylish Italian kitchen design, yet their stunning range of elegant kitchens with solid marble worktops as standard probably cost less than kitchens you may already be considering. Come and see Cucine Italiana Kitchens at 20A High Street, Harlesden, NW10, or call 01965 6037, 965 6037.
Cucine Italiana, for kitchens Italian.
From tequila to tubing and chemicals to crafts, fashion and art, Mexico means business. Find out how at Mexpo 85, a special exhibition at the Novotel Hammersmith from June the 11th to the 15th.
A very good Friday morning to you. Quickly through the morning music of the last 30 minutes. Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 23, the third movement, the soloist Vittorio De Coll. Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E minor, the third movement, the Zagreb Philharmonic, the soloist Helmut Fried. Lanner's Trenning's Waltz, the Vienna Concert Orchestra. And the Hamburg Philharmonic playing Haydn's Symphony No. 63. You're listening to LBC. The 6 o'clock news, this is Douglas Cameron. The chairman of English Football League clubs are meeting in London this morning to decide how to fight the ban on their sides playing anywhere outside England. The ban's been imposed by world soccer bosses as a punishment for the riot in Brussels, which left 38 dead. Mike Vince reports.
The FIFA ban has made England the lepers of world football, according to league president Jack Dunnett, and now chairman are demanding action. The ban's a cruel blow to clubs' hopes of balancing books and keeping their top stars away from the lure of continental soccer. Many pre-season tours have had to be scrapped, costing money clubs can ill afford. The chairman believes FIFA's been grossly unfair to bracket all clubs together, and FA chairman Bert Millichip has described the ban as totally unreasonable. And with millions of pounds, in some cases the club's very survival at stake, few chairmen are likely to disagree.
The top Nazi hunter, Simon Wiesenthal, says he's almost 100% sure that the body exhumed from a grave in Brazil is not that of Auschwitz death camp Dr. Joseph Mengele. That's despite claims by the Brazilian police, who dug up the bones, that they're just as convinced it is the infamous Angel of Death. But as they await the war criminal's dental records from Germany, Wiesenthal insists that if it were Mengele, his lawyer would already have confirmed that he's dead.
I can say I'm very, very skeptical. Look, I cannot say 100%, maybe 99%. And also his lawyer, Steinacker, in Frankfurt, give the vote of honor. When he will get the information that he is dead, then he will announce it.
The actor Stacey Keach, TV's tough guy detective Mike Hammer, is being freed from Reading Jail in the next half hour after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. His friend, the Tory MP Sir Julian Ridsdale, says the Hollywood star now wants to help Mrs. Thatcher in her crackdown on drug abuse.
Although he's had to suffer and he realises what has happened, he's behaved in an exemplary way in jail, I'm told, by the staff there. He wants to see that others can benefit by his credit here and what's happened to him. The last time I saw him when I visited Reading Jail, it was just after Margaret, the Prime Minister, had come out with her proposal for rehabilitation. And he said, I want to help her with this.
The man, buried under tons of rubble at the bottom of a collapsed well on the Isle of Wight, should be recovered, dead or alive, in the next few hours. Rescuers are within 10 feet of the victim, who's been entombed in the shaft since Monday. From the scene, Dave Loyne.
Rescuers are now more than 40 foot down, breaking and carting off large chunks of firestone and buckets of rubble as they go. Digging has been easier overnight, and Assistant Divisional Fire Officer Roger Bayliss says the end is now not far away.
The morale is excellent. They've got one objective in mind, and that's to get that guy out, and nobody's going to rest until that happens.
If they don't find Paddy Gerenus today, a team of expert tunnellers will join the final search tomorrow morning. Dave Loyne, IRN on the Isle of Wight.
Independent Radio News. A mother has been reliving the excruciating pain she suffered during a cesarean birth following a hospital blunder. Margaret Ackers was awake during the operation because she hadn't been given enough anaesthetic, and a muscle relaxant had paralysed her so that she couldn't cry out and alert the surgeon. The 31-year-old mum from Wigan says every agonising cut of the scalpel felt like a red-hot poker searing her skin. This report from Leslie Stevenson.
Wigan Health Authority admitted liability for what happened in the maternity ward 4 years ago, and a judge has awarded her nearly £14,000 damages. But Mrs. Ackers says she still remembers every minute of her hour-long operation.
I was taken into theatre thinking, sure, any minute now I'll go to sleep. I just wanted to curl up and scream out, but I couldn't. I've described it as being trapped in my own body.
The baby girl she had is now a lively 4-year-old, and she's since had another child. But she says for the rest of her life she'll live in fear of the operating table. Leslie Stevenson, IRN, Wigan.
A mother whose child was beaten to death has married the killer minutes before he was sentenced to 15 years jail for the murder. The marriage took place in a courtroom in California, which heard how the 34-year-old man fatally punched and kicked the 2-year-old girl in the apartment he shared with the mother. MPs will vote today on an unprecedented procedural device to let the Commons spend all weekend debating Enoch Powell's controversial bill banning experiments on human embryos. But with the Leader of the House, John Biffin, warning that if MPs agree to an open-ended debate, they'll be making a mockery of Commons rules, the ploy is expected to be defeated. From Westminster, Richard Dallin.
Ministers and opposition leaders are hopeful the vote to continue debate over the weekend will be rejected. John Biffin's view that a yes vote would cause political chaos may sway the many undecided MPs who've been influenced by constituents' letters backing the bill. Mr. Powell says his efforts to make it law have been quite within the rules.
They say all's fair in love and war. So nobody can dispute that it is a motion which is in order.
Whatever today's outcome, the Commons Procedure Committee will be asked to ensure it can't happen again. Richard Dallin, IRN, Westminster.
A government minister is being warned that he's sending a captive killer whale to its death if he agrees to have it moved from a cramped tank at Clacton-on-Sea in Essex. Environment Minister William Waldegrave says the whale, called Nemo, should go to Windsor Safari Park. But the environmental pressure group, Greenpeace, wants Nemo returned to the wild. Greenpeace whale expert Doug Cartledge says the Safari Park pool is already too crowded with dolphins and another killer whale.
So as soon as the killer whale's put into the pool, the dominant dolphins there will attack it. If they don't cause it damage, there may be a fight with the other killer whale, and there would be no way in the world that they would be able to separate them if they started. I think Mr. Waldegrave is sentencing that animal to a water grave if he sends him to Windsor, possibly unsuspectingly, but that's what will likely happen.
Independent Radio News, Douglas Cameron reporting. Philip Eden's at the weather desk. Has it stopped raining yet, Philip?
No, of course not. But several people said to me yesterday, it can only get better, can't it? Well, I suppose so, but it can take its time before it does get better. And we've got a good soaking still to come during this morning. Believe it or not, it's actually going to be colder today compared with yesterday. Now in central London, the temperature is just 8 degrees. During the day, it'll creep up to 12. And for all of us who live outside Greater London, it'll probably not even make 12. In other words, readings more typical of November than June, all helped, of course, by a cold northerly wind. Very dull and wet over the whole of the southeast just now and right through the rest of the morning. During the very end of the morning and the first part of the afternoon, the rain will begin to die out from the west and from the north, so drying up in Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Beds and Harts first, drying up in London during the afternoon, and then finally in Kent and Sussex around about tea time. And who knows, we may even get a few minutes of very late sunshine this evening.
Gosh, how exciting! The first week in June, and we're praying for a touch of sunshine. Well, Philip, there's a lot to talk about this morning, not least the weather. We will resume negotiations just after 6:30. It's 7 minutes past.
Do I have problem skin? I often get little irritations, rashes and chafing.
Don't worry. Many of us have sensitive skin patches which easily get itchy or sore, especially with tight clothes or after exercise. I always recommend Cuticura Mildly Medicated Talc. Cuticura combines a rich, fragrant talc with a mildly medicated ingredient called allantoin, so it helps soothe away skin irritations with a real touch of luxury.
Cuticura Mildly Medicated Talc for skin care with a touch of luxury at chemists everywhere.
Friday, June the 7th, a very good morning to you from the AM team here on LBC. The time is 8 minutes past six. One or two surprises to come this morning, namely for Bob, whose last morning it is with us, certainly for the time being. He doesn't know what's in the programme. We think we do, but All that is to come later. We certainly know the lead story, though. Everybody does. The Football League saying the decision to ban English clubs playing anywhere else in the world could mean a death sentence for some teams. The Prime Minister is supporting the move by soccer's international ruling body, FIFA, but already the Football Association has lodged a protest. And the Secretary of the League, Graham Kelly, is describing the move as a bombshell.
It's completely over the top, very unfair. It smacks of panic measures, and it'll not only harm the ability of the clubs who've been banned from Europe to put their house in order, in quotes, as people are telling us to do, because it will detract from their revenue-earning capacity. It will also adversely affect all the other clubs who can't go abroad, who can't go even to Scotland or Ireland or Wales to play a match and bring in some much-needed money into the country. I mean, it's a totally ludicrous situation to ban a team from going to, say, the Middle East, where there's never ever been a problem of exporting hooliganism. A trip to the Middle East in the middle of the season, a two-day trip to play a lucrative friendly match, flying the flag for Britain and bringing money into the country, and now there's a ban on it. It's completely ludicrous.
How badly is this going to affect the clubs financially? Can you put a figure on the sort of money that's earned by English clubs abroad?
No, I'm afraid I can't, because I don't know what sort of monies are involved. I mean, all I can say is that there are substantial guarantees payable to our top clubs. Our clubs who have been successful in international competition can command substantial sums by appearing overseas.
Does the league intend to appeal against this decision at all? Is there anything you can do about it?
Well, we've only just heard about it, and the league really has no standing insofar as FIFA, nor indeed UEFA, are concerned. It may be that we would wish on behalf of our clubs to make representations to FIFA, but that if that were the case, I mean, the clubs may be able to do it themselves via the FA, but if that were the case, we would do it through our own football association. We would not do it direct, I don't think.
You said that you're shocked at this decision to ban all clubs, but didn't you in some ways expect it, that clubs all over the world can't risk, again, the kind of scenes that we saw in Brussels?
Well, I think that that's a very wide question. The friendly matches which we're talking about, there has been no record whatsoever of crowd misconduct. So, as far as your question is concerned, no, we would not have expected it of any fair-minded organisation. I would have thought that a principle of justice is that somebody has to be proved guilty before being punished, and this seems to be excessive retribution.
The Secretary of the Football League, Graham Kelly, talking to Antonia Higgs at 11 minutes past six. The government's 8.6% pay rise to the nurses is this morning being condemned by a health union leader who says it could mean a spate of hospital closures. Rodney Bickerstaff, General Secretary of the National Union of Public Employees, NUPI, claims the pay award is being made without any extra money for the health service, which means services and patient care will suffer.
We don't believe that it gives as much as the nurses deserve. Secondly, it certainly doesn't give what we expected the Pay Review Board to suggest, and in fact the government has twisted it somewhat to ensure that it's done in a phased way so that most nurses don't get the full result, as it were, until well into next year. Although, of course, the cost of living is going up almost as we speak. And last but not least, the way that the government is trying to take some sort of credit out of what's been done, when we know that it's going to come out of hospitals, it's going to come out of health care, because they're not providing the money to back the offer.
8.4%, though, is well above even the government's own public sector pay limits, isn't it, of 3%?
Well, of course, the government's pay limits have been fairly flexible in some respects. It depends where you are in the hierarchy. The fact is that the government has got some £5,000 million in its reserves, which is going to hand out over the next year or two in tax cuts, and what we say is that they could spare £200 or £300 million out of that and still have plenty of money to buy the votes with for the next general election. The nurses deserved a better deal than they've got. They've waited a long, long time. And what we're going to see, because of this current offer and the way that it's not being funded, is hospital closures and or many thousands of jobs going down onto the dole queues.
Well, would you urge the nurses to reject this offer? And if so, how much more should they hold out for?
No, it won't be rejected. I think it will be accepted on the basis that that's all that there is. But I think that it's a double cross of the nation's National Health Service. And I think that we're going to find a sting in the tail before too long. We're going to find worse patient care because the government hasn't been fair to the nurses and backed up the offer with fresh money. The fact is that the increase is going to come out of, it can only come out of patient care. It's either out of jobs, equipment, or buildings. I mean, there's nothing else in the health service, is there?
Rodney Bickerstaff, the General Secretary of the National Union of Public Employees, Newpey, talking to AM's Mark Percy. The time, 13 and a half minutes past six. The Environment Minister, William Waldegrave, is being accused of sending a captive killer whale to a watery grave. He's acceding to demands from conservationists to have Nemo the whale moved from a cramped swimming pool at Clacton-on-Sea. The environmental pressure group Greenpeace want Nemo returned to the wild, but the minister says the whale should be moved to Windsor Safari Park. Greenpeace's whale expert, Doug Cartledge, a trainer for 10 years and a man who's worked at Windsor, says the safari park hasn't got enough room for another whale, and Nemo would, if he were moved there, probably be savaged by dolphins in the same pool.
Windsor Safari Park's already overcrowded as it is. It's got one killer whale, it's got a baby dolphin, it's got another baby dolphin supposedly on the way. Where are they going to put this killer whale? It faces grave risks because as soon as the killer whale's put into the pool, the dominant dolphins there will attack it. If they don't cause it damage, there may be a fight with the other killer whale. Then the submissive killer whale out of the fight has got nowhere to go. It's in a small pool, it can't go anywhere. So you've got two killer whales that are possibly fighting, and there would be no way in the world that they would be able to separate them if they started.
Well, how would Nemo survive if it were returned to the wild, having spent much of its life in captivity?
Well, Greenpeace have worked out a detailed survey, and the DOE have agreed with it, that we can release it into the wild because we will rehabilitate it before it's set free into the wild to make sure it's capable of surviving in the wild, and it's definitely got a better chance in the wild than it's got in the small pools that we've got in this country.
Just remind us about Nemo's background, how it came to Clacton.
He came to Clacton a few years ago along with two other killer whales. They were caught in Iceland by a company called International Animal Exchange. The two partners of Nemo died within 18 months of arrival. One died very soon after it arrived. And Nemo is the only survivor of the three. And he's been in solitary confinement now for over a year.
Greenpeace's whale expert, Doug Cartledge, who's talking there to Mark Percy. The time, 6:16. LBC News, the chairman of English Football League clubs had a meet this morning in London to decide how to fight the ban on their sides playing anywhere outside England. They believe the international soccer body, FIFA, has been grossly unfair in bracketing all clubs together. Top Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal says he's almost certain the remains of a body exhumed from a grave in Brazil is not that of the Auschwitz doctor Joseph Mengele. The Brazilian police have been insisting that the body is that of the infamous Angel of Death. MPs are to vote today on an unprecedented procedural device to let the Commons spend all weekend debating Enoch Powell's bill banning experiments on human embryos. The Leader of the House has warned that if MPs agree to an open-ended debate, they'll be making a mockery of the rules of the Commons. The actor Stacey Keach, who plays television detective Mike Hammer, is being released from Reading Jail in just a quarter of an hour's time. He says he wants to help Mrs. Thatcher's anti-drug campaign after serving 6 of his 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. The weather, dull and wet this morning, slowly drying out during the afternoon, and with a bit of luck we might see just a shaft or two of sunshine before sunset. Temperatures absolutely appalling for this time in June, or this time any time really, apart from about November, December, January and February. They're 8 centigrade, 46 Fahrenheit at the moment, and the top whack today is 12 centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit. It's 6:17.
Are you fed up with fat? Well, you don't have to be. Join thousands of other women and include AIDS Cubes for Slimmers in your calorie-controlled diet. AIDS Cubes contain no drugs, and the AIDS diet plan lets you eat 3 enjoyable meals every day. You just eat less because you're not so hungry anymore. AIDS Cubes for Slimmers helps you lose weight and keep it off in special low price packs at pharmacists now.
17 and a half minutes past 6 is the time. This evening, there was supposed to have been a grand gala opening of the new AquaZoom tubes at the Crook Log swimming pool in Bexley. But the ceremonies had to be postponed for a month after a tryout by councillors and VIPs led to the deputy leader being hauled unconscious from the pool and two women having to go to hospital for cuts and scratches. The council's recreation committee heard a report on the incident last night, and now the £250,000 tubes are being modified. Committee chairman Nigel Betts was at the VIP gathering.
It is true to say there were three mishaps that I think are worth mentioning. Two ladies were unfortunate enough to have cut themselves on the forehead and had a couple of stitches in the gashes that they had. And the deputy leader of the council did in fact pass out when travelling down the tube. Okay, it sounds pretty sensational, doesn't it? But really, I don't think it's quite as bad as it's made out. What wasn't mentioned, of course, that the deputy leader had already had five goes on the tube, and for somebody who's, what is he, 49 now, I mustn't malign him on his age, but I, you know, running up and down those sort of stairs and going up and down the tube, I think that, quite frankly, it's not surprising.
Now, you've had to postpone the opening. What have you done? Have you modified the tubes or what?
Yes, the grand opening has been postponed until July the 5th. That's enabled us time to carry out certain modifications and certain adjustments to the tubes. They are in fact constructed in sections, and one of the tubes will have to have a remould on one of the sections, but I understand that the other tubes can in fact be adjusted so that the ride is less fierce than has been in the past.
Are you absolutely happy that it's going to be safe once it's finally finished?
Well, of course, we wouldn't be opening it if we didn't think it was safe. These sort of things are a fun sensation. Not perhaps without danger, really, if somebody isn't perhaps as fit as they might be. But yes, of course, we wouldn't be opening them if we weren't satisfied that they were 100% safe. And I certainly will be making sure of that myself by taking a ride down them before the grand opening. And indeed, I hope you'll satisfy yourself by joining us on the evening and having a go down yourself.
Yes, you have invited us, actually. Have you been on them?
Yes, I went down on the same night as the other unfortunate accidents, and I would say well over 100 other people had at least a couple of goes each. I must confess the experience I found was a little bit hairy, but nevertheless exciting, and I think the sort of thing that a lot of children and youngsters will get tremendous fun from.
Bexley's recreation boss Nigel Betts talking to David Clark. David does plan to take a ride on the tubes when they do open, and when that happens we'll let you know. It's 6:21, here's Dominic.
Good morning, everyone. Football is the main talking point this morning, following a terrible day for the game in England. First, the worldwide ban on English clubs playing outside England, and then defeat for the national side at the hands of Italy by 2-1 in Mexico City. The Football Association are to ask FIFA to reconsider their decision, but there is no machinery for an appeal to be lodged, and worse may follow next month when UEFA could ban England from the European Championships. A controversial injury time penalty sent England to that defeat against Italy in Mexico. The decision was given against Gary Stevens and was converted by Alto Belli. The other goals had also come in the second half. Bagni opened the scoring for the Italians and Mark Hatley equalised for England a minute later. The one piece of good news for England this morning, their hopes of qualifying for the World Cup finals got another boost last night. Two of their chief rivals for a place in Mexico, Finland and Romania, drew 1-1 in Helsinki. The draw for the semi-finals of the Benton and Hedges Cricket Cup takes place this morning, even though Leicestershire are the only team definitely through. No play was possible in any of the three quarter-final games yesterday. They'll try again today. And another attempt will be made to start the Dunhill British Masters Golf Championships at Woburn this morning. Play was abandoned yesterday after half an hour, and the organisers have decided to stage the final two rounds on Sunday in a bid to complete the 72 holes on time. It's men's singles semi-finals day in the French Open Tennis Championships in Paris. John McEnroe will face Mats Wilander in one match. Jimmy Connors meets Ivan Lendl in the other. Tomorrow's women's singles final will be between Martina Navratilova and Chris Lloyd. The Dutch cyclist Eris van Lancker leads the Tour of Britain milk race going into today's penultimate stage. I'll get the countries right in a moment. His second place to Paul Watson yesterday was enough to give him the yellow jersey ahead of Roy Nickman, with Watson now in third place. Today's stage is from Leeds to Derby. This afternoon's racing is at Epsom and Catterick, after which there's an evening meeting at Haydock Park. Colin Turner's selections at Epsom are number 6, Snap Decision, in the 2 o'clock, and in the 3-5, number 7, Scottish Reel, which is today's nap. The best at Catterick is number 2, Bold Way, in the 3:45, and at Haydock Park in the 8 o'clock, number 1, Runaway. There's also afternoon greyhound racing at Bristol and Gosforth. Jim Bailey's selections are Queen's Gamble from Trap 6 in the 3.20 at Bristol and Classic Breeze from Trap 2 in the 4.22 at Gosforth.
Dominic, thank you. The time now is 6.23. A quick reminder that you're listening to AM on LBC. Time now for our wine expert, Andrew Jones, with his weekly suggestions amongst the wine shelves of the supermarkets and the shops.
Hi there. For our wines of the week, this week we start with a red, Vin de Paix des Collines de Rodanienne, Syrah, Tesco, 195. Now, you might think that sounds a little bit complicated. The wine itself, though, is a really full red Vin de Paix from the south of the Rhone. But you needn't worry about that strange name. Just look for the one word for the grape variety, S-Y-R-A-H, Syrah, a lovely full rich red from Tesco, 195. That's Syrah, Tesco, 195. My second choice, a dry white, not often seen these days, but used to be really quite popular in Britain, Beaujolais Blanc. 1983 vintage, an excellent year for Beaujolais Blanc, and for all white wines in that area. From Louis Jadot, a very well-respected house, on sale in Victoria Wine at £2.55. That's Beaujolais Blanc 1983, Louis Jadot, in Victoria Wine at £2.55. And the third, for those who occasionally like to have a German medium dry white wine that really has a touch of class and finesse, this is Mulheimer Helenenkloster, one word, Riesling Spätlese, 1983, won a gold medal from the Dollimore shops at £5.35. Now, very simply, they sell two different wines from Mulheimer, but one's much more expensive than the other. This is a very fine, fragrant and charming German wine from the lovely Mosel Valley. Mulheimer, well, I suggest that, in fact, just ask for the Mulheimer Riesling 1983 at £5.35 in the Dollimore shops, because it's so much cheaper than the other version from the same place that they have. That's all for this week. Happy drinking.
That was our wine expert, Andrew Jones. The time, 6.25.
While you're in another traffic jam or doing the housework, the shuttered windows of Paris have opened on a new day. Hot coffee and fresh croissant are being served. Rich and strange antiques are being set out in the exciting flea markets. And at Les Folies Bergères, they're rehearsing tonight's performance. Time Off, the specialists in short break holidays, will take you there. So take time off in Paris. See your travel agent or call 01 235 8070. 235 8070.
6.26, Jane Markham is at the AA. Good morning.
Good morning, and it's another very wet start on the roads, and spray is already proving a problem, particularly on the M1 if you're heading down into London. Do remember to use your headlights in these conditions, as visibility is very poor. To add to the water, there's a burst water main on Honeypot Lane at the junction with Charlton Road, just north of Kingsbury. The road is closed at the moment, although hopefully the Water Board engineers will be there shortly to turn off the main, and that should reopen before the rush hour gets into full swing. And I've got two sets of faulty traffic lights to report, on the A3 Clapham High Street at the junction with Clapham Park Road, and another set on Earls Court Road at the junction with the A315 Kensington High Street. These are just slightly faulty, but nevertheless likely to cause a problem. Jane Markham, AA Road Watch.
Good morning. At domestic airports, no reports of any difficulties. On the continent, it's a generally foggy start to the morning, but this isn't expected to interfere with operations. And if you're meeting passengers, British Airways arrivals are well to time with three exceptions. BA236 from Oman, a provisional landing time of 11 o'clock. From Australia via Singapore and Abu Dhabi, BA012, 1 hour late at 10 past seven, and a longer delay on BA020 from Peking, Hong Kong and Bahrain, an approximate Heathrow arrival time of 11 o'clock this morning. Finally, Canada's incoming services are all on or close to time. Marie Collette, Air Travel News.
Nothing from British Rail. The time is 27 and a half minutes past six, and at this time every weekday morning for many years, I've bid the man who's sitting next to me right now a very good morning, and he's gone on to tell you what's in the programme.
Yes.
Today it is rather different. It's his last morning on the AM show after 10 years, and, you know, he's only really got a very sparse knowledge of what is in the programme, because we have a lot of surprises lined up for him between now and 10 o'clock. Here's surprise number one. Ted Heath and his orchestra playing one of your all-time favourites, Bob. A very special good morning, Mr. Holness.
Good
we thought that would make you feel rather welcome and get yourself settled in for your last 4 hours.
I tell you what, I've only been here 10 years, but that takes you back about 30, 40 years. That does. Teddy's Opus 1.
Nice recording, isn't it?
Was a good recording, yes. It was completely different from the old Tommy Dorsey Opus 1, but it was one that Ted Heath was asked for wherever he went at that particular time. How did you get hold of it, Cameron?
Well, sir, that's a little bit of a secret between myself and the production staff here.
Yes, I've got it at home, but I didn't know you had it hanging about. Anyway, well, thank you very much indeed. I'm not going to say what's in the programme today, because, as you said, I have very little knowledge, apart from the fact that I know we've got our fruit and veg experts coming in. I know we are going to talk about soccer, and that's an important topic today. And as regards anything else at all, well, you've got that look on your face, so I'm not going any further. This is AM at 6:30.
LBC News, the chairman of English Football League clubs meet this morning in London to decide how to fight the ban on their sides playing anywhere outside England. They believe the international soccer body FIFA has been grossly unfair in bracketing all clubs together. Top Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal says he's almost certain the remains of a body exhumed from a grave in Brazil is not that of the Auschwitz doctor Joseph Mengele. The Brazilian police have been insisting the body is that of the infamous Angel of Death. MPs will vote today on an unprecedented procedural device to let the Commons spend all weekend debating Enoch Powell's bill banning experiments on human embryos. The Leader of the House has warned that if MPs agree to an open-ended debate, they'll be making a mockery of Commons rules. The actor Stacey Keach, who plays television detective Mike Hammer, is being released from jail in Reading about now. He said he wants to help Mrs. Thatcher's anti-drug campaign after serving 6 of his 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. The weather, if you'll pardon the expression, is Philip.
Well, the abysmal weather of yesterday staying with us for half of today, but there will be a very gradual improvement later on. Lousy temperatures in central London, just 8 centigrade or 46 Fahrenheit this morning. It'll make 12 or 54 late this afternoon. If that's right, it'll make it the coldest June day since 1977, and there'll be a brisk northerly wind to go with it. It's raining practically everywhere in London and the southeast. Indeed, it's still raining as far north as Sheffield and as far west as Bristol. So you can see we've still got a couple of buckets full of rain still to come here in London this morning. This afternoon, though, we will be squeezing the last drops out of it. By the end of the afternoon, some breaks in the cloud and maybe a little bit of brightness this evening.
Well, what about the weekend? I mean, this surely can't go on, Philip.
No, not quite. Saturday will actually be, in comparison today, very much better.
Isn't there another belt of rain coming down from the northwest?
Oh, yes, there is. That's going to get here on Saturday evening or Saturday night, I'm afraid, and still around on Sunday morning before that too clears away. Some sunshine on Saturday, maybe 4 or 5 hours or even a bit more.
Oh, boy.
Some sunshine on Sunday as well after the rain's cleared and before the next lot of rain comes.
Yeah, it is. Is it going to continue like this? How many more of these damn belts are coming down from the northwest, for goodness sake?
Oh, there's a whole series of them, I'm afraid.
Really?
Yes, and as you say, they're coming from the northwest, and with the wind basically in that direction, of course, it's going to stay on the cold side, not as cold as today, but afternoon temperatures up around the 15, 16 degree mark, which really isn't all that much to write home about.
You could say that, yeah.
I think yesterday must have been about the most dismal June day I've ever seen.
Wait till today.
It might remind some of our older listeners of Coronation Day back in 1953. That was a similar sort of day with similar sort of temperatures. Actually, yesterday there was an interesting contrast across southeast England. People living down in Kent and Sussex didn't have too bad a day. Not much sunshine, but the temperature up around 18. On the north side of London, only around 10 or 11.
Well, we can only underline what you probably heard in the travel earlier, and that is if you're coming on any main roads today, there's so much rain lying around on the road that there's an awful lot of spray being kicked up. Take terrible care, won't you? It's 26 minutes to 7.
And here's Crime File.
And on the Crime File, an armed robbery in Camden. 2 security guards were injured when armed robbers struck at Lloyds Bank in Camden High Street on Wednesday. One was inside the bank when a man with a handgun fired a shot at him, causing a flesh wound, and he dropped a cash bag, which the robber seized and ran out. The second guard tried to grapple with him, but he was shot in the leg. In fact, there were 3 robbers involved, all dark-haired and of mid-European appearance. They weren't wearing masks and must have made quite a spectacle as they made their getaway in a white BMW. This was about 1:20, so the high street was busy with shoppers and workers on their meal break who may have had a clear view of what was going on. If you saw the robbery or the men escaping at speed from the Camden High Street area in a white BMW on Wednesday lunchtime, we'd very much like to hear from you. Or perhaps that car has been abandoned in your street. Either way, give us a ring here at the yard. Our number is always 01 from outside London, 230 1212. Gillian Humphrey, LBC Crime File at New Scotland Yard.
It's 6:35.
Look around, court store, you'll find furniture galore. Look around.
Look around your local court store for special sale offers at half price. Furniture, half price. Bedding, half price. Upholstery, half price. And carpets, half price. Even at sale prices, all Court's carpets over £3.99 a square yard are fitted free.
Look around, court store.
Your kind of sale is on now.
Jennifer, you know this imaginary superstore I've been thinking about?
Oh, no, not again.
Yes, again. I'm just checking that there's nothing else you'd like in it, because I've already got a bank and a bakery and clothes and a DIY department and a coffee shop and everything.
Yes. Yes, I would like an enormous drinks department, please.
Very good idea.
The superstore with everything is now open. It's Tesco Brent Park, Neasden. Today's Tesco, tomorrow's superstore.
Will 200 different wines be enough, then, do you think, Jen?
Do you mean? What are you trying to say? Are you trying to infer something by that?
Remember this? It's the loud DHL commercial.
For super sure, super fast delivery, call DHL on 01994-6433.
But now you know about us, we can turn it down a little, like this. California, here we come, all the way from old London. Mind you, this is just an experiment. If you all stop calling DHL on 01994-6433, we're going back to...
For super sure, super fast delivery, call DHL, the super courier.
What do you think?
We'll rant and we'll roar like true...
And rant and roar like true young sailormen they do. But like all spirited youngsters on the threshold of true adventure, that boisterousness often masks fear and trepidation of what lies ahead. What lay ahead for the Marquesas in last year's Tall Ships race was a tragic disaster. In Tall Ships, Tall Men, we'll find out what lays ahead for the cruise this year. Join me, John Simcock, at 9:30 Saturday evening here on LBC.
Now you must have been a beautiful baby.
Good morning. Here's the LBC anniversaries and birthdays. On this day in 1520, Henry VIII met Francis I of France at the Field of the Cloth of Gold in Picardy. On this day, Bob and Doug are doing their last AM show together after 11 years. Tom Jones is 45, Virginia McKenna is 54, the painter Pietro Annigoni is 75, and the National Book League's director Martin Goff is 62. If you want your birthday mentioned, why not drop me a line? Bruce Pavey, LBC, Golf Square, London EC4P, 4LP. I'll take the replies on a first-come, first-served basis and feature you with the famous.
Now you must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a wonderful child.
Yes, thank you, Bruce. I know, Douglas, that we've met many, many listeners who have... chronological minds, and they can work things out, and they keep tabs of things. I mean, we have people ringing us up every day, almost, with dates and times that astonish us the way people listen. It shows how faithful some listeners are. And to stop any letters that may come in and say, surely you've only been doing the AM show 10 years. Yes, it is 10 years, but 11 years, I think, since my association with LBC, because I started going up in the helicopter a year before that, which is probably what Bruce was thinking
I expect about. So. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Let's do that. Let's pass on to a bit of news now. Some servicemen in the British Army of the Rhine won't get a pay rise this year, even though pay in the forces will go up by an average of 7.5%. The reason is that charges for accommodation and food have been revised and allowance overseas cut. Here's our aviation correspondent, Paul Maurice.
Already, the local overseas allowance, that's the amount paid to troops serving abroad, has been cut by as much as 60% for the forces in Germany, and the pay rise should have compensated for this. But soldiers and airmen who move into better accommodation and have to pay extra food charges may not actually see anything more in their pay packets, and a few of the troops may even get less. But the Ministry of Defence points out the majority of the forces will be substantially better off. The brigadiers will get an increase of 8.5%, with their pay going up to £29,401 from £27,101. The Armed Forces Pay Review Board, whose report was accepted by the government, has tried to force up the pay of the fully trained and highly skilled members of the services, and therefore a corporal gets a rise of almost 8% from £8,408 to £9,125. The rises are backdated to April, but the new charges for accommodation and food will reduce the actual net increases by about 1%. Overall, the pay rise will cost the 18,000 million defence budget about 7.5%. That's £220 million. £120 million is already accounted for in the agreed 3% increase in the defence budget. But Defence Secretary Michael Heseltine will have to find a further £100 million. He'll have to do this by moving forward some of his pet projects from this year to next. For instance, he has already delayed the signing of a contract for a new Type 23 frigate, and this will save him about £120 million, enough to pay for the armed services rise, unless it's needed to pay for the cost overruns on things like the Nimrod anti-submarine aircraft.
LBC's aviation correspondent, Paul Maurice. Well, time for our look ahead to the city at 20 to 7, presented in association with British Telecom Voice Bank. The FT index closed down 9.5 at 1,007.6 yesterday, and with a look at today's prospects, it's Janice Sutherland.
The market didn't feel inclined to shake itself out of its gloom yesterday. It started off with a bout of depression, but instead of taking the tablets, it just decided to let it get worse. Not that it had any reason to be cheerful. The knowledge that for the time being at least, any possibility of an interest rate cut has been shelved, and the news that a major Hong Kong bank, Overseas Trust, has gone to the wall, well, it found plenty to fuel its misery. Even the pound's recovery on the foreign exchanges after 2 days of battle couldn't raise a weak smile. There was sterling, throwing its weight around, and all the dollar could do was go into hiding. It swiped 1.25% of the American currency at just over 127, and it fared just as well against some major Europeans, taking its average value abroad to 79.2 of its 1975 value. So why has the pound been feeling so smug all of a sudden? Well, now that an early interest rate cut has been dismissed, sterling's been given a bit of a breather. But it also got some help in the shape of the first quarter balance of payment figures. The current account had been expected to show a deficit of 86 million, but the revised figure actually revealed a surplus of 123 million, and that was thanks to invisible earnings like tourism and banking. But the pound's not out of the woods yet. Those oil price worries, which have plagued it recently, aren't going to go away, especially with the OPEC meeting looming on the not too distant horizon. As for the dollar, it might have been out of favour yesterday, but today it might find a friend in the May American jobless figures. Though if the city analysts have done their sums properly, the unemployment rate will remain unchanged. No economic indicators from this side of the water, though, and company results are a bit thin on the ground. Half-time results from English China Clays might provide some excitement with their expected $24 million or thereabouts profits. The only other half-timer is Manchester's Piccadilly Radio, and there's just two full-timers, GT Global Recovery Investment Trust and SOMIC.
Well, that was Janice Sutherland on Wall Street. There's some pundits giving one or two quotes this morning. Michael Hooker of Van Casper & Company in San Francisco says the market is moving higher on the perception that interest rates will continue to go lower. And that does seem to be true. Anticipating still lower interest rates, the stock market, Wall Street, closed at a new plateau for the second consecutive day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 6.72 to close at 1327.28, erasing the record level on Wednesday and setting a new all-time high. We turn to the papers here on Fleet Street and one or two of the comment columns. On the Telegraph this morning, On the Way Up is a feature. There'll be some among the senior echelons of the Labour Party, say the Telegraph, who will not be too distressed that Mr. Kenneth Livingstone's campaign to become the treasurer of the party has not got off to a brilliant start. The speed with which he climbed to the top of the Labour group after the last GLC election, brushing aside the then leader, Andrew McIntosh, is a warning that Mr. Livingstone does not intend to limit the rest of his political career to look after the interests of Brent East. Mr. Kinnock may well have allowed himself a quiet chortle at Mr. Livingstone's embarrassing public slip at the press conference to launch his campaign. Through a slip of the tongue, Freudian or otherwise, Mr. Livingstone talked about a Labour leadership contest. Mr. Kinnock has already told him he has no chance of winning. He's a shrewd politician, though, says the Telegraph. In recent months, he's left behind the rantings of the Labour Herald, of which he was co-editor, eased the GLC out of the rate-capping battle, and become more associated with Mr. Kinnock's soft-left socialism. Moreover, he has the type of personality that British voters seem to like. He poses as the underdog, never appears to lose his temper, and his cheeky amiability is a reminder of the 1960s, when Harold Wilson's perennial political juggling was a pleasantly attractive diversion from economic reality for so many voters. Mr. Livingstone, says the Telegraph, is a much more effective pretender for that throne than Mr. Kinnock. It may be dangerous to underestimate him.
Well, it's funny you should mention the 1960s, Bob, because in among England being kicked out of just about every sort of football in the world and the pay rise for the nurses, I found a nice little editorial which says this: what a boom time for the golden oldies of pop. With Jerry Marsden back in the charts with You'll Never Walk Alone and Channel 4 now announcing repeats of Ready, Steady, Go. Now, the Star says, we have a good idea. How about the BBC dusting off the old tapes of 6-5 Special, starring Don Lang and the Frantic Five, introduced by swinging Pete Murray? On second thought, says the Daily Star, maybe not. Well, I don't know that we could release Pete Murray from Nightline, where he's doing such sterling work for us here on LBC, do you?
Ridiculous to give it a thought, I would have thought. What's on the back pages, lovely?
Well, the sad news, of course, the two main stories, the ban on English clubs playing football anywhere other than in England and England's defeat by Italy by 2-1. Peacemakers, the headline in the Daily Mirror above the story on that match, the lepers and the Star, FA Chiefs gloom at shock world ban, honour in defeat, and lepers of the world in the Sun. Penalty rocks brave England, and we are the lepers in the Express, softly, softly in the Daily Mail. At Jeff Powell's column there, a day begun by England's public gesture of penance ended in defeat by Italy's last-minute penalty, but the fact that neither the penalty nor Italy's victory were deserved mattered less than the preliminary repairs affected to England's fractured image abroad. And the opinion column in the Daily Express, squealing, the FA say they are appealing against yesterday's world ban on English soccer teams. It sounds more like squealing than appealing. Of course the penalty imposed by FIFA hurts. Good, there are 38 reasons for it. A painless punishment is no deterrent at all.
A topic on which we'll be talking to Steve Tung, our soccer expert, later in the programme. He's in Mexico. While here in the studio, just after the news at 8, we'll be welcoming from the Mail on Sunday, Pat Collins. He's the chief sports writer. He was on AM a week or two back, you may recall. He's rejoining us to look at that ban, as I say, just after the news at 8. The time now, 14 minutes to 7.
Your first chance to hear a full report on the day's trading in the city is on LBC's early evening news at 24 minutes past 5. Presented in association with British Telecom Voice Bank.
I say, George, take a look at this.
Anyone we know?
No. Interesting thing about Dan Air.
Another new route?
No, they're offering 2 seats for the price of 1 on the Heathrow-Manchester run.
Really?
The offer is for any full economy adult fare in the month of June, single or return, on any designated Dan Air flight. Just book an hour in advance and travel together.
Why are we travelling from London to Manchester by train,
you
then?
You tell me. You're the financial director.
For further details of Dan Air's 2-for-1 fare from Heathrow to Manchester, contact your travel agent or Dan Air today.
6:47, the news. The chairman of English Football League clubs meet this morning in London to decide how to fight the ban on their sides playing anywhere outside England. Top Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal says he's almost certain the remains of a body exhumed from a Brazilian grave is not that of the doctor of Auschwitz, Joseph Mengele. And MPs had a vote today on an unprecedented procedural device to let the Commons spend all weekend debating Enoch Powell's bill banning experiments on human embryos. We'll be going to the Commons in just a moment for a report. But now the weather, dull and wet this morning, slowly drying out during the afternoon, with the clouds breaking just before sunset. Only temporarily, though, I'm afraid. It's 8 centigrade, 46 Fahrenheit now, and it'll only go as high as 12 centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit today. The wind is moderate northerly. Sunset comes at 13 minutes past 9 this evening, with the lights going on at 9:43. On the roads, of course, spray the big hazard as it continues to rain in many parts of the southeast, and a set of failed traffic lights already causing a bit of bother in Clapham, the junction of Clapham High Street and Clapham Park Road. Despite the rain, racing goes ahead, of course. The Epsom meeting continues today, where the Diomed Stakes is the feature event at 3:05. Catterick has the other afternoon card, and there's evening racing at Haydock. Here's Colin.
The Diomed Stakes at 3:05 tops the bill at Epsom today, and even though only 7 runners are down to go, the punters could see an interesting event. Number 1 Capricorn Bell and the number 2 Cataldi both have to carry the top weight of 9.6, but with the ground on the soft side, the number 1 may have the best chance of those two. The number 5 Prismatic from the Henry Cecil stables scored a win in the Judmont Lock-in Stakes last time out, but is now asked a difficult question today. My vote, however, will go to the Michael Stout train number 7 Scottish Reel. He's won 3 this season and may just be able to step up to group class here. Earlier, I'll expect number 6 Snap Decision from the Richard Hannon stable to give punters a good run for their money in the opening race at 2 o'clock. At Catterick, the Marybent Stakes at 3:45 has 11 taking part, and even though I'll expect the number 8 Gledden from the Bill O'Gorman stable to run well, following her good recent second to Fancy Walk at Leicester last week, she may not stop the number 2 Bold Way from landing a second quick win. Meanwhile, at Haydock Park this evening, the number 1 Runaway could bring up a hat-trick in the 8 o'clock. The nap for the day, that goes to number 7 Scottish Reel in the 3:05 at Epsom.
The time, 6:50.
Look around, Court Store, you'll find furniture galore. Look around.
Look around your local Quartz store. It's stacked with sale bargains. At Quartz Sale, you'll save on carpets and beds, settees and chairs, bedroom and dining room furniture. Look around Quartz and you'll find some of the lowest prices in town.
Look around Quartz store, look around Quartz Sale, see why Quartz is your kind of store.
And your kind of sale is on now.
A week on Saturday is the Multiple Sclerosis Flag Day, the one day a year when the Society's collection cans appear on the high street. But not all the cans will be coming out, because some of them have no one to rattle them. We've got the cans, but they're no use without the collectors. If you're willing to spare just a couple of hours Saturday week, call the Multiple Sclerosis Society on 01381 4022. That's 01381 4022. And give us a hand to fight multiple sclerosis.
It's still very early in the morning in Washington, and while a few lights are burning in the State Department, there's no evidence yet of any unusual activity or panic. A breakdown in intelligence may be the cause. There is speculation that U.S. officials were not given advance warning of today's development at Gulf Square. Certainly, President Reagan has not been woken. But then one recalls at least two other occasions when his aides misjudged the situation and allowed him to sleep, only to have regretted their decision with hindsight. If the White House does issue a statement on the Holness affair, we'll be the first to bring it to you. Good luck, Bob, and thank you.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Thank you, Andrew Manderstam. What an incredible thing. I was all set to say, here's our parliamentary roundup, and up pop Manderstam. How many more of those are going to come?
Well, I'll be quite frank with you. I didn't know that was in the show. That makes two of us.
Amazing.
Lovely stuff.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Soft spot for Andrew. We went to his wedding. We've known him for a long time, and he's doing a great job over there in America. How nice that he could spare the time. Anyway, the question on some people's lips today, dear, oh dear. Who said what to whom about what in Parliament yesterday? I say it's not the question on my lips this morning. I've got lots of other questions in my mind, but here's Des Fahey, who sat through that lot.
The government's review of the Social Security system, published at the beginning of the week, continues to be the source of parliamentary conflict and surfaced again during questions to the Prime Minister. The Leader of the Opposition, Neil Kinnock, wanted to know if Mrs Thatcher would reveal the figures on which the review was based, on, for example, housing benefit, even in the form described as a reliable indication.
That's what we've asked for, a reliable indication. That's what we want, and that's what the millions of people who will be affected by it want. Yeah, yeah. Why won't the Prime Minister come clean?
Speaker, I have indicated to the Right Honourable Gentleman the proposed savings of £500 million are hoped for. That is only 1/6 of the increase on housing benefit, which has occurred between 1979 and 84. That seems to me eminently reasonable.
The question of figures came up again later when the Liberal leader David Steele opened a debate on the problems of the elderly, and he said that trying to assess the likely effect of the government's plans on pensioners was like trying to read a company report without the profit and loss account. What's more, he said, Norman Fowler had told the Commons the benefit changes would not cost any more money.
The Secretary of State himself did say way back in April 1984 that the review was supposed to be revenue neutral. Now, how can we tell if they're revenue neutral without the costings? Or how can we tell if they have saved the £1 billion, which the Chancellor said he wanted to save, without the costings?
The Social Security Minister, Tony Newton, told him that what was needed was an effective structure, and within that context, figures were not significant. The problem that looms over many MPs, though, is the procedural device being exercised on Friday that could mean that the Commons sits all weekend, something that would set a precedent for debates on private members' bills, because the reason behind this move is to push through the legislation proposed by Enoch Powell, banning experiments on human embryos. When Mr. Powell rose during Prime Minister's questions, there was a hushed anticipation that the matter was about to be raised.
Will the Prime Minister spare a moment this afternoon? I'm sure she will, to convey to her Chief Whip...
What was he about to say?
An expression of the delight which today's news has caused in all parts of the House.
Speaker, may I thank the Right Honourable Gentleman most warmly and the response which his question has evoked from all parts of the House.
Sighs of relief all round. He was simply expressing his delight at the forthcoming marriage of John Wakeham. But the private member's motion extending the sitting was raised by former Prime Minister James Callaghan.
Prime Minister should be in the House tomorrow. Will she, as I hope,
be able to vote with me against the abusive procedures that are proposed by this bill.
The Prime Minister has made it clear, though, that she is opposed to the idea of extending the sitting over the weekend. Some MPs who originally supported the Powell bill, as it is known, are now having second thoughts about this latest move, as Conservative David Harris explained to the leader of the House, John Biffen.
Viewed the fact that the House gave an overwhelming second reading the bill by the Right Honourable Gentleman for Down South, but despite that, many of us who voted in support of the bill have distinct reservations about the tactics apparently to be employed tomorrow. Would my Right Honourable friend reconsider his previous position on this matter, and even at this late hour, perhaps give an undertaking that government time will be made available so that this very important measure can be given the proper consideration which it deserves?
I'm grateful for that question, which certainly wasn't planted. I want to make it quite clear, and for there to be no ambiguity about this, there is no prospect of government time being made available.
At this stage, it seems unlikely that the MPs are in for a weekend sitting.
Well, that was Des Fahey reporting from Parliament. It's 5 to 7 on this Friday morning. We've got travel for you right after this.
Yes, friends, the choice is yours. Brought to you by Peugeot. Okay, okay, give them the choice. Would you rather be the proud owner of a magnificent Peugeot 205 in lots of different colors? Or 10 crisp pound notes? Available only in green. Still want the money? Well, simply test drive a Peugeot 205 and then go and buy another new car in its class. We're so sure you won't do that, we'll give you £10 if you do.
The Peugeot 205. We bet you £10 that if you drive one of ours, you won't buy one of theirs.
Yes, friends, the choice is yours.
Your Peugeot Talbot dealer has the details.
Well, the very wet roads of London this morning, looked at now by Jane Markham.
Yes, they certainly are wet, and once again it is spray that's causing the main problem for the drive-in to work. Do remember to use your headlights and leave plenty of room between you and the vehicle in front of you. And still on a watery theme, there's a burst water main on Honeypot Lane at the junction with Charlton Road. The road is still closed at the moment. Hopefully that will be reopened, though, before the main bulk of the rush hour gets underway. Otherwise, it's faulty traffic lights causing delays. The A202 Camberwell New Road at the junction with Ruskin Street is one location, another set on the A13 at the junction with East Ham Manor Way, and a third set on the A3 Clapham High Street at the junction with Clapham Park Road. Jane Markham, AA Road Watch.
News now, and there's very little to worry bus and tube travellers so far this morning. The underground is running well, and most bus routes also have their full complement of buses. Just one serious black mark, that's at Kentish Town Station on the Northern Line, because the escalators there are not working. Ken Cordner reporting.
At domestic airports, no reports of any difficulties. On the continent, it's a generally foggy start to the morning, but this isn't expected to interfere with operations. British Airways arrivals are well to time, with three exceptions. BA236 from Amman, landing at 20 past 11. From Australia, via Singapore and Abu Dhabi, BA012, 1 hour late at 10 past 7. And finally, a longer delay on BA020 from Peking, Hong Kong and Bahrain, an approximate arrival time of 11 o'clock. Marie Collette, Air Travel News.
Nothing from British Rail. In the North Sea and the English Channel, winds are moderate northerly. The sea's moderate, but the visibility is poor in the rain. Now the currency, what you'll get for a pound, buying these here before you go. The American dollar, 1.26.5. The French franc, 11.67. The West German mark, 3.81. The Greek drachma, 1.69. The Dutch guilder, 4.31. The Irish punt, 1.22.5. The Italian lira, 2,450. And the Swiss franc, 3.19. This is AM.
Stop waiting, start living.
Now, come to Schreiber at 101 for beautiful fitted kitchens and bedrooms. Come for savings of 50% on selected units you fit yourself. Come for our free measuring and planning service. Come Monday to Friday, 9:30 to 5:30. Come Thursday till 8 at night. Come Sundays, 10 till 4, when the parking's so easy.
Come on to Schreiber now.
Schreiber at 101 Baker Street, West 1.
Oh, well, another exhibition over.
Yeah.
Can I give you a lift to your hotel?
No, it's okay. I'll walk.
Walk? Round here?
Yeah, I'm only down the road. Novotel in Hammersmith Broadway.
Yeah.
After a hard day on the stand, the last thing I need is a hard night on the road.
Novotel in Hammersmith is ideally situated for visitors and exhibitors to Earls Court and Olympia. 640 bedrooms, car parking for 230 cars, and prices from only £45.50 a night.
Wrong way, mate. Mind if I join you for a drink?
Great, without being grand. Novotel.
We talk over the next hour to the London teacher who solved the problem of employment by starting her own school. And we look back 10 years to the news which was around when Cameron and Holdis started on AM. First, though, after the main news summary at 7, the latest on the man trapped down the well on the Isle of Wight. 1152 kilohertz, 97.3 VHF stereo. LBC, as always, talking to London.
The 7 o'clock news, this is Douglas Cameron. The chairman of English Football League clubs are meeting in London this morning to decide how to fight the ban on their sides playing anywhere outside England. The ban's been imposed by world soccer bosses as a punishment for the riot in Brussels, which left 38 dead. This report from Mike Vince.
The FIFA ban has made England the lepers of world football, according to league president Jack Dunnett, and now chairman are demanding action. The ban's a cruel blow to clubs' hopes of balancing books and keeping their top stars away from the lure of continental soccer. Many pre-season tours have had to be scrapped, costing money clubs can ill afford. The chairman believes FIFA's been grossly unfair to bracket all clubs together, and FA chairman Bert Milichip has described the ban as totally unreasonable. And with millions of pounds, in some cases the club's very survival at stake, few chairmen are likely to disagree.
The actor Stacey Keach, TV's tough guy detective Mike Hammer, has been freed from Reading Jail within the past half hour after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. As he left the prison, he said, "It feels great to be free. I made a mistake and I've paid for it." His friend, the Conservative MP Sir Julian Ridsdale, says the Hollywood star now wants to help Mrs. Thatcher in her crackdown on drug abuse.
Although he's had to suffer and he realises what has happened, he's behaved in an exemplary way in jail, I'm told, by the staff there. He wants to see that others can benefit by his tragedy and what's happened to him. The last time I saw him when I visited Reading Jail, it was just after the Prime Minister had come out with her proposals for rehabilitation. And he said, "I want to help over this."
The man, buried under tons of rubble at the bottom of a collapsed well on the Isle of Wight, should be recovered, dead or alive, in the next few hours. After 85 hours of round-the-clock digging, rescuers are now within 10 feet of the victim, but no sound has been heard from him, and his family are fearing the worst. From the scene, Dave Loyne.
Rescuers are now more than 40 foot down, breaking and carting off large chunks of firestone and buckets of rubble as they go. Digging has been easier overnight, and Assistant Divisional Fire Officer Roger Bayliss says the end is now not far away.
The morale is excellent. They've got one objective in mind, and that's to get that guy out, and nobody's going to rest until that happens.
If they don't find Paddy Gerenus today, a team of expert tunnellers will join the final search tomorrow morning. Dave Loyne, IRN on the Isle of Wight.
The top Nazi hunter, Simon Wiesenthal, says he's almost 100% certain that the body exhumed from a grave in Brazil is not that of the Auschwitz death camp doctor, Joseph Mengele. That's despite claims by the police in Brazil, who dug up the bones, that they're just as convinced it is the famous, infamous Angel of Death. But as they await the war criminal's dental records from Germany, Wiesenthal insists that if it were Mengele, his lawyer would already have confirmed that he's dead.
I can say I'm very, very skeptical. Look, I cannot say 100%, maybe 99%. And also his lawyer, Steinacher, in Frankfurt, give the vote of honor. When he will get the information that he is dead, then he will announce it.
Independent Radio News. A mother has been reliving the excruciating pain she suffered during a caesarean birth following a hospital blunder. Margaret Ackers was awake during the operation because she hadn't been given enough anaesthetic, and a muscle relaxant had paralysed her so that she couldn't cry out and alert the surgeon. The 31-year-old mum from Wigan says every agonising cut of the scalpel felt like a red-hot poker searing her skin. This report from Leslie Stevenson.
Wigan Health Authority admitted liability for what happened in the maternity ward 4 years ago, and a judge has awarded her nearly £14,000 damages. But Mrs. Ackers says she still remembers every minute of her hour-long operation.
I was taken into theatre thinking, sure, any minute now I'll go to sleep. I just wanted to curl up and scream out, but I couldn't. I've described it as being trapped in my own body.
The baby girl she had is now a lively 4-year-old, and she's since had another child. But she says for the rest of her life she'll live in fear of the operating table. Leslie Stevenson, IRN, Wigan.
A mother whose child was beaten to death has married the killer minutes before he was sentenced to 15 years jail for the murder. The marriage took place in a courtroom in California, which heard how the 34-year-old man fatally punched and kicked the 2-year-old girl in the apartment he shared with her mother. Here at home again, MPs will vote today on an unprecedented procedural device to let the Commons spend all weekend debating Enoch Powell's controversial bill banning experiments on human embryos. But with the Leader of the House, John Biffin, warning that if MPs agree to an open-ended debate, they'll be making a mockery of the rules of the Commons, the ploy is expected to be defeated. From Westminster, Richard Dallin.
Ministers and opposition leaders are hopeful the vote to continue debate over the weekend will be rejected. John Biffin's view that a yes vote would cause political chaos may sway the many undecided MPs who've been influenced by constituents' letters backing the bill. Mr. Powell says his efforts to make it law have been quite within the rules.
They say all's fair in love and war, and nobody can dispute that it is a motion which is in order.
Whatever today's outcome, the Commons Procedure Committee will be asked to ensure it can't happen again. Richard Dallin, IRN, Westminster.
The government minister is being warned that he's sending a captive killer whale to its death if he agrees to have it moved from a cramped tank at Clacton-on-Sea in Essex. The environment minister, William Waldegrave, says the whale, called Nemo, should go to Windsor Safari Park. But the environmental pressure group Greenpeace wants Nemo returned to the wild. Greenpeace whale expert Doug Cartledge says the safari park pool is already too crowded with dolphins and another killer whale.
So as soon as the killer whale's put into the pool, the dominant dolphins there will attack it. If they don't cause it damage, there may be a fight with the other killer whale, and there would be no way in the world that they would be able to separate them if they started. I think Mr. Waldegrave is sentencing that animal to a water grave if he sends him to Windsor, possibly unsuspectingly, but that's what will likely happen.
Independent Radio News, Douglas Cameron reporting.
News from LBC's London desk, Britain's major package holiday firms say they're worried that holidaymakers will be forced to fly from Stansted when the Essex airport is expanded instead of Gatwick. Scotland Yard urgently wants to trace customers at a Finsbury Square post office yesterday morning who may have seen two joggers who carried out a robbery after handcuffing the cleaners. And trading standards officials have seized more than £30,000 worth of counterfeit goods in raids on Epsom Downs stores during Derby Week.
The rush hour spray is the main problem, really, as the roads are still very, very wet indeed. We'll get confirmation of that from Philip when it's going to finish in a minute. And a set of failed traffic lights in Clapham, Clapham High Street, at the junction with Clapham Park Road. Right, Philip.
Well, another plain nasty day today, though things will reluctantly begin to cheer up a little later on. I suppose you want to know what the temperature's going to do. Well, this morning it's 8 degrees in the city and not far from 8 degrees anywhere in the London area. And during the day it'll soar to a magnificent 12. The worst of the day's weather is going to be this morning, dull and wet throughout, but the rain will die out during the middle part of the day, drying up first of all to the north and west of London, easing off in London itself around lunchtime or soon after, but in East Kent the rain probably won't stop until tea time. Once the rain has gone, the cloud layer slowly lifting and breaking, and we can look forward to a few late gleams of sunshine. By the way, today's 12 degrees is close to the average. You can take your pick, close to the average for early November or late March.
Gosh, 8 minutes past seven.
Hello, Miss Jenkins. It's Belinda Winstanley here from Heavenly Temps. I've got your CV in front of me. Very good, lots of experience, 70 words per minute shorthand, and I see you're a Scorpio.
That's right, yes.
Just one other thing, dear. Exactly what time of the day were you born?
Time? Oh, about 3 in the morning, I think.
Oh, dear. Oh, I am sorry, but that means you're a moon child.
A what child?
A moon child, dear. Born on the cusp in the third quarter with Saturn, your ascending planet. 3 hours earlier and I could easily have fixed you up.
3 hours?
Yes, but as it is, I couldn't possibly get you anything until, next full moon on the 15th when Pluto aligns with Mars.
Girls with an eye for the future don't chance their luck on the stars. They come to Reed. With thousands of the best temp jobs coming in each week and benefits to match, Reed always have the job that's right for you, no matter what star sign you are.
You are always late for everything, you Scorpios. Tell me, what star sign was your mother?
Reed Employment. You can't put your future in better hands.
From Bob Honus on Friday the 7th of June, good morning on this, for me, somewhat sad and special AM, my last after 10 years, a fact which I've no doubt Doug Cameron will allude to from time to time over the next hour of the programme. However, to get on. Rescuers on the Isle of Wight have been making quicker progress overnight in their search for the man trapped down the well since Monday. Digging has been easier, and firemen are hoping to reach the bottom of the well this morning. If they do not find Romanus Garenus, or Paddy Garenus as he's now being called, expert tunnellers will be brought in to assist the operation. From the Isle of Wight, Dave Loyne reports.
Inch by inch, building workers and firemen have now been constructing a prefabricated concrete well for more than 80 hours. But there's still 10 foot to go before they reach the bottom of the Victorian well where Paddy Gerenus disappeared under tons of firestone and soft sandstone on Monday night. Assistant Divisional Fire Officer Roger Bayliss says the last few feet have been easier than the heavy work of the first days.
They certainly have. We've put the 19th ring in. Everything is grouted in, including the 19th ring, and they're digging now for the 20th ring.
The 20th ring would mean 40 foot down, so there's still a way to go, isn't there?
Approximately another 10 foot if we go on the assumption that it's a 50 foot shaft.
So what kind of a night's it been digging?
It's been rather easier. There's not so much hard rock, and they're ploughing the way through it.
Today they expect to reach the final phase as firemen make the search for Paddy Gerenus at the bottom. But Roger Bayliss says they don't know yet what they'll find.
As we go down the bottom of the shaft, the bottom of the shaft, we understand, funnels out. We're hoping that he's going to be directly in the shaft and we'll be able to get him out. But if he's away to the bottom edge of the funnel, further away from the ladder, then we've got a tunnel within that shaft, within the bottom of the funnel, to try and find him. And tomorrow, I understand, there's some expert tunnellers coming down ready to do that sort of operation.
So the long, agonising vigil of family and friends continues in the fourth cold, misty dawn since Paddy Gerenus was buried alive on Monday. Morale is high among rescuers in this highly efficient operation.
The morale is excellent. The fire brigade, the civil engineers, every department that's dealing with this rescue operation, they've got one objective in mind, and that's to get that guy out, and nobody's going to rest until that happens.
And if there's no sign of life this morning, the search could continue into the weekend.
That report from Dave Loyne. The time, 11 and a half minutes past seven. And as we heard in the main bulletin, the Brazilian authorities have dug up the grave where they believe the notorious Nazi war criminal Josef Mengele is buried. They believe the man who died in a swimming accident in 1977 and is buried as Wolfgang Gerhardt is in fact Mengele, nicknamed the Angel of Death. Some experts say the whole business may be an attempt to cover up the real whereabouts of Mengele himself. Journalist Jan Rochas has been watching the exhumation in Sao Paulo.
It's a very small, in fact, rather a pleasant cemetery in a little town about 20 miles from São Paulo. But this pleasant, small cemetery was transformed into a sort of madhouse because there were so many press there, photographers, plus policemen, plus officials from the German consulate here. And the grave itself, where Mengele is supposed to be buried, was covered in grass, was rather abandoned, in fact.
What exactly has happened to the body now?
The remains have been taken to the state mortuary in São Paulo for examination by forensic experts.
Any idea at all at this stage how long it's going to take before they can say for certain whether this is Mengele's body or not?
Well, apparently it could take up to 2 weeks to really identify the bones and decide who they really belong to and whether they belong to Mengele or not. Although another version says that if the teeth are in good condition, the identification could be completed in a much shorter period of time.
What impression did you get from the Brazilian authorities and other observers about how convinced they are that this is Mengele, he is now dead?
The police authorities here seem to be very confident that they have in fact found Mengele. The chief inspector here said he was 90% certain it was Mengele. But the German authorities have been much more cautious about this. They really don't want to say anything at the moment.
There have, of course, been reports of Mengele's death in the past, and certain authorities on the Nazis have said that it's very useful that when a campaign was being whipped up to find Mengele, that suddenly these reports come out that he's dead.
Well, that's obviously true. It would be very convenient to have the case closed. On the other hand, I suppose one should remember that other Nazi war criminals have been found in São Paulo. One was found here in 1979, Gustav Wagner. One was found here in 1967, Franz Stangl. So there are other cases of Nazis having hidden themselves in São Paulo. And São Paulo, after all, is a huge city, 30 million people. It's a pretty good place to hide when you think about it.
Jan Rochas, a journalist in Sao Paulo, talking to our reporter Antonia Higgs. Well, the time's 14 minutes past seven. We turn to a London teacher who's solved the problem of unemployment in a rather unusual way in just a moment. Stand by for the news in brief.
A safety cage of rigid steel, dual circuit brakes on every wheel. It's all a part of, it's at the heart of, making a Volvo. We paint the car, then we paint the paint. Some say it's fuzzy, we say it ain't. It's all a part of, it's at the heart of, making a Volvo. Now some people think it's funny, making a car this way. Surely it all costs money, and somebody has to pay. This is not the case, as you will see. If you look at the price of a 340, it may surprise you and open your eyes to owning a Volvo. The Volvo 340 DL, still only £5,270, excluding number plates and delivery. A lovely Volvo, a simply terrific Volvo, an indescribably enjoyable brum brum whoopee Volvo.
LBC News at 7.15, the England manager Bobby Robson is condemning the world soccer boss's ban on English clubs playing anywhere in the world as a devastating blow. He says it's been imposed because of the violence of a small group of imbeciles. The Brazilian authorities are waiting for dental records from Germany to find out if the bones they dug out of a grave are the remains of Nazi death camp doctor Josef Mengele. Top Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal is insisting that Mengele is not dead. Rescuers digging for the man buried in a collapsed well on the Isle of Wight are now within 10 feet of him. They expect to recover him dead or alive in the next few hours. The actor Stacey Keach has been released this morning from Reading Jail after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. As he left the prison, he said, "It feels great to be free. I made a mistake, and I've paid for it." The weather, dry and wet this morning, slowly drying out during the afternoon with the clouds breaking just a little bit before sunset. It's 8 centigrade 46 Fahrenheit, and it'll only move, I'm afraid, 12 centigrade 54 Fahrenheit. More like March or November, as Philip said. The wind is moderate northerly, sunset 9.13, lights on 9.43. Traffic? Not very much to report at the moment, apart from a general warning to drive carefully, because an awful lot of spray is being thrown up on the roads at the moment. One specific set of failed traffic lights, Clapham High Street, Clapham Park Road. 7.17.
Welcome to the Hotel Splendide. A double room? £155 a night.
A bit much, isn't it? Good afternoon, madam. Welcome to the Regal. A single room, that's £85.
Anything less?
If you're looking for a great hotel that's not too grand, fly over to Hammersmith and Novotel. From only £55.50 a night for a double, Novotel has all the facilities of a big London hotel without paying for the frills.
Welcome to Novotel. A double room for you, sir?
That'll do me grand.
And a single for you, madam.
For reservations, call 01-741-1555. Novotel.
Yes, well, good morning. If you've just joined us, 17 and a half minutes past seven, Bob Holness and Douglas Cameron with you with AM, till 10 o'clock, of course, before which anything on this rather odd day could happen. We turn now to that London teacher I mentioned a moment ago. She solved the problem of finding herself a job by starting her own school. The move has meant instant promotion for 27-year-old Jennifer Mason to headmistress. But it's also involved having to work more than 12 hours a day to get the school in Charterhouse Square in Smithfield ready for her first intake. In between planning the curriculum for the pre-prep school, which will eventually take 125 pupils from 3 to 8, she's been donning a boiler suit to decorate. Our reporter Eve Conway went down to the school to talk to her about the venture.
While I was at university last year, the Institute of Education, I had various ideas that I was formulating about teaching young children. And my beliefs grew stronger as the year went by. And I just felt that this was the most ideal opportunity that I had, because otherwise I'd never get it done if I didn't do it now. How will the school differ from other schools? On the physical side, the Charterhouse Square School will differ because there's wallpaper on the walls and there's carpets, which is quite unique for classrooms. So the actual physical appearance differs dramatically. And also we've got very modern, up-to-date tubular furniture and sort of generous on the computers in each classroom. But I don't think we differ too much on the academic side, because I think most schools, or pre-preparatory schools, let's say, are really trying their hardest to provide an excellent education for their own children. What kind of commitment has there been from you, though, to get the school started? Well, Basically, at the moment, it's a financial commitment because I've had to put my own flat up as security for a bank loan. So obviously, I'm sort of interested in that side of things, that the school doesn't collapse, so I don't lose my own home. But I think you have to be prepared to do that. And if you are, then it convinces the bank that you really are very committed to your own project. But on a professional level, I really want to try and provide an excellent school and a happy environment for the children.
Are you qualified, though, enough, do you think, for this role?
The role of headmistress at my age? I think so, yes, because, in fact, you don't need any qualifications to set up your own school. And having a master's degree, I don't know if that necessarily qualifies you, because I think in some ways the more you know, the less you know. But, no, I mean, the academic qualifications I've got more than ample.
But you don't need any qualifications to set up a school. There's an eye-opener. Jennifer Mason, 27, starting her own school in Charterhouse Square in Smithfield. She was talking to Eve Conway. Well, we turn to sport now, 20 past 7 on AM. And not for the first time, of course. Soccer is one of the main, not only sports stories of the day, but international stories. And for very good reason, Dominic, yes?
Certainly a very good reason, and widespread condemnation by the football authorities of FIFA's decision yesterday to ban English clubs playing outside this country. The FA say that they'll appeal against the decision, but the General Secretary of FIFA, Joseph Blatter, has made it clear that there can be no formal appeal, although individual clubs could ask the governing body to reconsider. At the moment, the FIFA ban doesn't affect the national team, but UEFA are due to meet later this month to discuss further sanctions, and if England were to be banned from the European Championships, FIFA might extend that ban to the World Cup. The national team were in action last night, of course. In Mexico City, they lost to Italy by 2-1. Our football correspondent Steve Tung saw the game.
Bobby Robson would have been more than satisfied with a draw to start a meaningless tournament but useful period of acclimatisation. That was denied him, though, when the Mexican referee saw fit to award a penalty for what looked a fair challenge by Gary Stevens. Robson did have the consolations of a fine debut by Stevens and well-taken headed goal by Mark Haitley, laid on by two of the substitutes, Hoddle and Barnes. And knowing that neither players nor supporters let him down when English football was very much in the public eye also helped temper the disappointment of a defeat which was all in all undeserved. Steve Tung, IRN Sport, Mexico City.
The one piece of good news for English soccer this morning comes from Helsinki, where Finland produced another shock when they held Romania to a 1-1 draw in a World Cup qualifying game. That result not only helps England, who are virtually certain to qualify anyway, but also Northern Ireland, who are level with Finland on points but have a game in hand. The draw for the semi-finals of the Benson and Hedges Cricket Cup takes place this morning, even though Leicestershire are the only team definitely through. No play was possible in any of the other three quarter-finals yesterday. They'll try again today. And another attempt will be made to start the Dunhill British Masters Golf Championships at Woburn. Play was abandoned yesterday after just half an hour, and the organisers have decided to stage the final two rounds on Sunday in a bid to complete the 72 holes on time. It's men's single semi-finals day at the French Open Tennis Championships in Paris. John McEnroe faces Mats Wilander in one match. Jimmy Connors meets Ivan Lendl in the other. Tomorrow's women's singles final will be between Martina Navratilova and Chris Lloyd. The Dutch cyclist Ernest van Lanke leads the Tour of Britain milk race going into today's penultimate stage. His second place to Paul Watson yesterday was just enough to give him the yellow jersey ahead of Roy Nickman and Watson, who's now in third place. Today's stage is from Leeds to Derby. This afternoon's horse racing is at Epsom and Catterick, after which there's an evening meeting at Haydock Park. Colin Turner's selections at Epsom are number 6, Snap Decision, in the 2 o'clock, and in the 3-5, number 7, Scottish Reel, which is today's nap. The best at Catterick is number 2, Bold Way, in the 3:45, and at Haydock Park in the 8 o'clock, number 1, Runaway. There's also afternoon greyhound racing at Bristol and Gosforth. Jim Bailey's selections are Queen's Gamble from Trap 6 in the 3:20 at Bristol and Classic Breeze from Trap 2 in the 4:22 at Gosforth.
Thank you, Dominic. It doesn't take too much brain work, I suppose, to figure out that the film Steaming, which opens today, must be based on Nell Dunn's stage play of the same name. It's on the newly released list, which means that it comes under the critical eye this week of our movie buff, Carol Allen. Steaming, I believe, is the one which takes place in a Turkish bath.
A Turkish bath in the East End, yes, the women who go to the Turkish bath, and although they all come from different backgrounds, different classes and whatever, they all have something in common. It's, interestingly, Joseph Losey's last film, the one he just finished making before he died. Not what you might call typical Losey, but I've never disliked a Joe Losey film, and I enjoyed this. There's been no effort made to open it out, to make it into a film story. It's all set inside the baths, which look like a palace. But it's the characters who are important. Another late, the late Diana Dawes, yours as the lady who looks after the baths, Sarah Miles as a middle-class career woman, and Vanessa Redgrave as her friend whose husband has left her. Best performance I've seen Sarah Miles give for a long time. And Patty Love is absolutely delightful. She runs away with it. It's not a great film, but I find it a very enjoyable film. It is, of course, an intelligent woman's film, as anybody will know who's seen the play. But I think it's about time men went along as well, actually.
It's a very impressive cast, anyway. Will we know any of the cast of the next one? It's a youth film, isn't it?
Breakfast Club. It's an American film. The only one people might have heard of is Emilio Estevez, who's Martin Sheen's son.
Ah.
This is also, in fact, a group of people in an enclosed situation. Five high school students are doing a detention on Saturday for bad behaviour. And it's rather like an American youth version of In Camera, you know, the Jean-Paul Sartre thing. Stick a group of people in an enclosed space and they'll find out hell is other people. Or it's not unlike Steaming, in that here is a group of youths who all find they have something in common, though they're all very different. In this case, guess what? It's their parents, rather than in Steaming, where the women are talking about men.
Oh, I see.
It's a bit like going to a group therapy session. That's the only thing. It's done very well with young people in America. I wonder if young people here will identify it with it in the same way.
OK, well, we've had a spate of Commonwealth films of late. Now we get one from just across the channel, My Best Friend's Girl.
It's a lovely French film, which I thoroughly enjoyed. The only person in it I've heard of is Isabelle Huppert. There's also a middle-aged French comedian called Coluche, who in some ways has a few things in common with Tony Hancock, and a very good-looking man called Thierry Lhermitte. It's about two friends, the two blokes, and the girl who comes between them. And she's a very unusual girl. I mean, the story would appear to be a bit, you know, she's a bit of a tart, to put it bluntly. But the way Miss Huppert plays her, she comes over as a very straightforward lady who knows, sees what she wants and goes for it, whereas the blokes sort of sit around suffering agonies of guilt. It's a thoroughly nice film, and I very much enjoyed it.
Hmm. Now, the last one has Michael Elphick in it. Now, I've got a great regard for this gentleman. I mean, he's just finished a television series called Three Up, Two Down, which I thought was absolutely super. But I gather he doesn't come up to your expectations.
Well, it's a waste of a good actor. It's also a waste of Esmond Knight. The film's called Element of Crime. It's directed by a Dane. And I think it's a load of rubbish, quite frankly. A very pseudo-artistic. It all takes place in Elphick's mind, the character he plays, who's a detective, who's remembering this case he investigated in Germany. It all takes place in the dark and derelict buildings. He's investigating some rather nasty sex crimes on little girls. And if I had been awake, I think I might have been offended by some of the sexual violence in it. I think it's a nasty little film, and I didn't like it at all.
Well, pick the bones out of that. What about the local releases, Carl?
Oh, quite nice. It's clubs on the locals.
Good.
Cotton Club and Breakfast Club. Witness is still around. And Mean Season, the Kurt Russell film I talked about last week. And also Beat British Film Year in the ABC's next Thursday again with Heat and Dust, Company of Wolves, The Dresser and The French Lieutenant's Woman, depending on which is your local.
So, lots to see if you're in the mood for going to the pictures, and what better to do in weather like this. However, it's going to clear up tomorrow, so Philip says, momentarily, and today as well, a little later on, isn't it?
A little bit. I think we're going to see a slightly better afternoon than we've got a morning.
Couldn't
and
be
a
worse.
Slightly better evening than we have an afternoon. So it all amounts to another rather nasty little day, really.
It amounts to a fairly nasty rush hour, as we'll be finding out in just a moment.
DHL here, with a commercial for people who need to send packages all round the world.
If it's an urgent package that's needed on the other side of the world, it's a job for DHL, the super courier.
I'll explain further. You see, if you think that DHL just deliver documents, you're wrong. Almost bonkers, actually. Because DHL deliver artwork, computer discs, electronic parts, drill bits, samples. In fact, all sorts of packages all around the world. Has that straightened you out? Or do we need to spell it out for you? JUSTCALLDHLON0199464333. PLEASE.
Escape for half a minute with time off. Change your country cottage for a comfortable Paris hotel. Instead of the supermarket, shop in the open market for pâtés, wines and cheeses. Forget the local and drink coffee and cognac in any one of a thousand pavement cafes. And leave the country walks to stroll the tree-lined boulevards. Take time off in Paris, the specialists in short break holidays. See your travel agent or call 01-235-8070. 235-8070.
So, Jane Markham, how are things on the roads?
Well, it's a very wet rush hour so far. Spray is causing the main hazard, so do remember to use your headlights. And we've also got a burst water main on Honeypot Lane at the junction with Charlton Road. And our patrols say that traffic is really beginning to build up around that area. A tree has fallen across the road on Peterborough Road near the junction with Lowlands Road in Harrow, and that's causing a bit of congestion at the moment. Otherwise, it's mainly faulty traffic lights causing delays. The lights at the bank are all out of order at the moment. On the A3 Clapham High Street at the junction with Clapham Park Road, on Earls Court Road where it joins the A315 Kensington High Street, and on the A202 Camberwell New Road at the junction with John Ruskin Street in Kennington. Jane Markham, AA Road Watch.
Bus and Tube news now, and if you travel by Northern Line from Kentish Town Station, please be warned that the escalators there aren't working this morning. But with that exception, underground services are good, with regular trains on all nine lines, and most bus routes too are in good shape, though slow progress is likely where traffic is heavy on this very grey morning. Ken Cordner reporting.
And I'm delighted to say that there's nothing from British Rail, so let's give you a time check. 7:30.
Yes, friends, the choice is yours. Brought to you by Peugeot. Okay? Okay, give them the choice. Would you rather be the proud owner of a magnificent Peugeot 205 in lots of different colors? Or 10 crisp pound notes? Available only in green. Still want the money? Well, simply test drive a Peugeot 205 and then go and buy another new car in its class. We're so sure you won't do that, we'll give you £10 if you do.
The Peugeot 205. We bet you £10 that if you drive one of ours, you won't buy one of theirs.
Yes, friends, the choice is yours.
Your Peugeot Talbot dealer has the details.
News from in and around London at 7:31. Britain's major package holiday firms say they're worried that holidaymakers will be forced to fly from Stansted when the Essex airport is expanded. They believe charter flights from Gatwick, which account for half its traffic, may be switched to Stansted on government orders. Trading standards officials have seized more than £30,000 worth of counterfeit goods in raids on Epsom Downs stalls during Derby Week. They found bogus audio cassettes, shirts, jumpers and jackets, all copies of famous brand names like Pierre Cardin and Lacoste. It's thought the items are produced abroad with fake labels added in Britain. 8 stall holders are being questioned. Customers at a South London post office have been staging a sit-in in protest at its closure tomorrow. Among the customers at the South Wimbledon branch office are elderly people who are furious because they'll now be faced with a long journey to pick up their pensions. They say it'll be a big blow.
So if this post office closes, there's a post office at Kingston Road, which is another 200 or 300 yards out the road, crossing the main road. They go to Collierswood, they've got to go on the underground, cross the road there, or if they're infirm and can't get out, they've got to give the Home Helps 50 pence to go and get their
pension. So you're saying it's going to be a lot of inconvenience?
Oh, I'm a disabled... if they've got a Home Help, the Home Help goes and gets their pension, right. Well, there's a fare to get there, but also she's losing half an hour, perhaps an hour's work.
An unusual-looking visitor to London, who's just made her first big journey, is in the capital for the next few weeks, and what's more, the public will be able to look at her. She's the Pride of Baltimore, an early 19th-century sailing ship, now moored alongside Tower Pier after crossing the Atlantic. She's also a privateer, as Captain Jan Miles explains.
Sir Francis Drake invented it.
A sort of piracy.
Exactly, legal piracy. It's legalized pirates. The government would give out a letter of marque because the government did not have a navy or a service that could do the job, and the private sector would step in and help out. And the way these votes helped out was to sneak through the blockade that the English Navy had and get down to the supply lines that the British were using in their merchant fleet.
And today's main stories in brief. The England manager, Bobby Robson, is condemning the world soccer boss's ban on English clubs playing anywhere in the world as a devastating blow. Rescuers digging for the man buried in the well on the Isle of Wight are now within 10 feet of the victim, but they don't know whether he's dead or alive. The Brazilian authorities are waiting for dental records from Germany to find out if the bones they dug out of a grave are the remains of the Nazi death camp doctor Josef Mengele. And actor Stacey Keach has been released this morning from Reading Jail after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain. In a moment in AM, an item, the contents of which I'm the only member to be totally unaware of.
Anyway, Philip, let's have the weather before all that.
I think I'd rather not be aware of what the weather's going to do today. Mm. The north wind doth blow. We're not going to have snow, but there's quite a bit of cold rain to come before things improve late on in the day. Central London's temperature in centigrade 9, climbing, well, creeping to 12, in Fahrenheit 48 this morning and 54 later on. It'll remain thoroughly wet and miserable during the first half of the day. There are still some pockets of heavy rain scattered around the London area, but as the morning progresses, there'll be less chance of the heavy stuff and more chance of it easing off at times. The rain will finally rain itself out in London early this afternoon, a bit earlier than that to the north and west of the capital, and rather later in Kent. And after the rain stopped, it'll still be a while before the clouds break, but they should break just in time for a few flashes of sunshine this evening.
Philip, as I suspect, the next item has some relevance towards the fact that this is my last edition of AM. It may be looking back 10 years. What about the weather 10 years ago? What was it doing in 1975 at this time?
1975 was a year of extremes. You can say that every year, I think.
I suppose so, yeah.
It really was. We'd had the warmest winter for 106 years,
had
since
we?
1869, followed by a cold and very wet March, floods across the Midlands, and there was snow at Easter. There was also snow, as we've mentioned already this week, on the 2nd of June 1975.
Yeah.
It settled on the cricket pitch at Buxton, one of the more famous photographs of that year, I think. There were heavy snow showers in the Chilterns and a few flakes even in London. That particular week, the equivalent week to this week, was the exact opposite of what we've just experienced. On the 2nd of June 75, as we said, it snowed. The 2nd of June 85, we had 15 hours of sunshine and temperatures getting up to 25, 26. Today, the 7th of June 85, probably no sunshine and a maximum of 12. On the 7th of June 1975, 15 hours of sunshine and temperatures up to 28.
Which all goes to prove there's nothing new under the sun, if you can see the sun at all because of the rain clouds. Thank you, Philip. 25 to 8.
Take off in style with Austin Rover. Man, take hundreds off manufacturers' list prices. Pounds off new Metros, Maestros and Montegos. Pounds off the Austin Rover you've always wanted. Save £600 on a Metro City 1 litre. On the road, just £3,660. Call 01-567-6644. That's 567-6644 today. Marn, hundreds of pounds off Metros, Maestros and Montegos.
A week on Saturday is the Multiple Sclerosis Flag Day. The one day a year when the Society's collection cans appear on the high street. But not all the cans will be coming out, because some of them have no one to rattle them. We've got the cans, but they're no use without the collectors. If you're willing to spare just a couple of hours Saturday week, call the Multiple Sclerosis Society on 01381 4022. That's 01381 4022. And give us a hand to fight multiple sclerosis.
This is Brian Hayes, and this morning a personal view of the week's news by Robert Elms. David Yallop will tell us why he believes Pope John Paul I was murdered 33 days after being elected. We talk about jazz with jazz performer and historian John Chilton. And we'll be listening to your comments on the day's news. Be with me from 10 till 1 this morning on LBC.
The time now is 7:37. You're listening to AM on LBC. And as many of you, I'm sure, will know, it's Bob's last morning on AM. Our partnership, which began back in 1975, is almost over. But it's astonishing, really, how all those years ago I'd had one or two co-presenters with me who, for one reason or another, didn't quite fit the bill. And it was thought that Bob, who at that point was providing us with traffic news from way up high in the days when LBC had a helicopter, would be ideal. Now, the big question was how to persuade the already busy and successful Mr. Holness to get up very early in the morning 5 days a week.
Mm.
Well, the man who did persuade him is on the line to us now from his home in the Midlands, ex-editor of LBC and Independent Radio News.
This is your line.
Now an executive with Central Television, Marshall Stewart. Marshall, good morning.
Good morning to you, Douglas.
Good heavens.
You, Bob, and I go back quite a long way, don't we?
Well, I think, to be fair, between you and me, Bob Holness probably goes back further than anybody else in broadcasting.
Thank you, Marshall.
The three of us, I think I'm right in saying, first worked together way back in 1967.
I worked it out at nearly 20 years ago, in fact, when the three of us worked together first in the BBC's South East programme. Then after that, the Today programme. We joined up again, of course, the three of us, as Bob says, at LBC nearly 10 years ago, and it It's odd, isn't it, just to complete the chain that Bob and I will be linking up here at Central, where Blockbusters is made, of course.
Marshall, you've never actually told me, although we have spoken many times over the years, how exactly did you convince Bob to get up early in the morning, 5 days a week, 10 years ago?
Well, I think after we talked at great length, of course, about his virtues and strengths, which all of your audience will be well aware of, his geniality, his unflappability. In the end, it came down, I think, to one simple thing, his willingness to work for very little money.
You're absolutely right, Marshall, because I was working for little enough in that helicopter out there. It was just the thrill of going up over London every day on that beautiful summer for 8 months and looking down over London and doing a job which was thoroughly enjoyable. But I must say it's been much more enjoyable down here in the studio over the 10 years. It's been a long trial, 10 years of getting up at 3:30 in the morning, but it's one of those things, and as you say, I'm now popping up to Nottingham from time to time to do Blockbusters. Looking back, Marshall, all those years, it is interesting, isn't it, that I was presenting in those days with Derek Parker and Tim Gudgeon. We did them 1 week in, 1 week out on South East, didn't we? Do you remember?
That's right. And over the years, obviously, having associations with the doyens of breakfast time broadcasting, including people of such as Jack DeManio, of course, Robert Robinson, John Timpson, one or two of them still performing at breakfast time. But I think, in a sense, the thing which is I've always identified with you, and of course with Douglas, is the ability to maintain the right relationship with the audience in the morning, a good balance between professionalism and friendliness. I mean, I'm sure that's a tradition which Douglas and Peter Dealey will continue in the future, but it's so important in the morning to get that mood right, isn't it, when most of us who are listening are just a little bit sensitive.
Marshall, presumably over the years there must be a story or two you can recall concerning Bob.
Oh, you mustn't do things like that to people. That's an awful thing.
Oh, yes, you must, Marshall.
Well, as you know, he's very keen on music. Everybody would be well aware that he never misses, does he, a chance to get a bit of music somewhere, however irrelevant.
Oh, you've noticed, haven't you?
Into his programme. I mean, the odd mean saxophone or trombone will creep in somewhere. I do remember a few years ago back at the BBC, he was very keen to persuade us to put a flugelhorn player onto the air. Nice idea, except one or two things were just against it. When the guy turned up, the flugelhorn was too large to fit into the studio.
It was an alpine horn, wasn't it?
Yes.
That's right, it was about 17 feet long.
Something like that. The whole session, if you remember, had to be done live in a corridor.
Yes, it did.
It was just about 8:30 in the morning, I suppose, so being the BBC, there were lots of gentlemen in bowler hats and blue suits and umbrellas going by saying, good morning, good morning. And Bob was having some difficulty in persuading the interviewee to understand his English.
Yes.
And it was fairly hard going at times. And searching for a simple question, Bob said desperately in the air to this guy, so you played the flugelhorn by ear, to which came the classic reply, no, only with the mouth.
That was on when I was presenting the Saturday Morning Today programme, and I remember quite well that we wanted to get the sound from the end of this 17-feet alpine horn into the microphone. So the man stood at the other end of the corridor and blew. Then I asked the question, and he had to run right down the corridor to the microphone in the studio to answer the question. Ah, dear, dead days. Thank you, Marshall, very much indeed for coming up. Totally unexpected, but how very, very nice to hear from you.
Well, good luck to you, Bob, and of course to Douglas and everyone on AM.
Thank you, Marshall.
We must go now because Dominic Allen's entered the studio. He's going to do sport in a couple of minutes, and you know how he throws his weight about, don't you? You remember that?
I do indeed.
Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
Thank you, Marshall, very much. The time, 18 minutes to 8. How nice to hear from Marshall Stewart again after all these years. We hear now from a familiar voice on AM, Bob Beckman. Moderate activity on the stock market yesterday, with leading shares falling sharply and the Financial Times 30-share index closing 9.5 down at 1,007.6. The government securities index was again down 0.03, closing at 81.83. Here's Bob Beckman delivering his last report of the financial week.
This week's set of rules for the equity market is that falling interest rates are good for share prices, providing the exchange rate doesn't fall. If the exchange rate falls, that's bad news for share prices because the authorities are using interest rates to defend the exchange rate. There are two major factors affecting the exchange rate, which are the oil price and American interest rates. Over this past week, American rates have been tumbling with gusto, and most analysts are now looking for yet another cut in the Federal Reserve discount rate. The force which is driving American interest rates down is the weakness of the American economy. For the time being, it will appear that U.S. monetary policy is geared to targeting real GNP in America. As the prospects for real GNP growth deteriorate, the Fed will be loosening the purse strings. Today, market players in America will be anxiously awaiting the U.S. unemployment statistics. If the unemployment figures are bad and show a weakening economy, that could trigger another cut in the discount rate. As long as there's no further negative news on the oil front, evidence of further weakness in the American economy, in addition to lower American interest rates, will boost sterling. And that should revive enthusiasm for a cut in UK base rates, which has largely evaporated over the past few days. Prospects of a base rate cut will boost UK equities and UK government securities. Of course, that only applies for the shorter term. As I explained last week, capital markets are dynamic and not static. The rules keep on changing all the time. Market players may suddenly decide that the weakness in the American economy could produce negative factors which override the benefits of lower interest rates. As a result, this week's positive news could be next week's negative news. So far, I haven't taken into account the latest banking fiasco, which is somewhat difficult to quantify. Yesterday afternoon, the closure of Overseas Trust Bank Limited of Hong Kong was announced, and it's a real whopper, with assets of $9.25 billion Hong Kong dollars and reserves of $1.25 billion. The bank has 44 branches in Hong Kong and additional branches all over the world, including London, where it's a licensed deposit taker. Now, this is the latest in a series of continuous shocks to the international banking system, which are getting bigger all of the time and occurring with increasing frequency. The failure of Overseas Trust Bank Limited is yet another reminder of the extremely precarious and unstable financial world in which we live. It's a world where the financially unwashed should not be gambling in speculative markets.
Bob Beckman on AM on LBC at 7:45 on Friday, the 7th of June, 1985.
To find out the fastest way of driving to France, we pitched a Porsche 911 Turbo against a Reliant Robin. Predictably, the Porsche was first to the ferry. But on the Dover-Calais stretch, it could only muster a top speed of 25 miles per hour. The Reliant took a slightly different route, cruising along on the hovercraft at 65 miles per hour, leaving the Porsche in its wake. If you'd like to go from Dover to Calais or Boulogne faster than that Porsche, call Hoverspeed or pull up at your nearest travel agent. Hoverspeed, half the time, twice the style.
7:46 LBC News. The England manager Bobby Robson is condemning the world soccer boss's ban on English clubs playing anywhere in the world as a devastating blow. The Brazilian authorities are waiting for dental records from Germany to find out if the bones they dug out of a grave are the remains of Nazi death camp Dr. Josef Mengele. Rescuers digging for the man buried in a collapsed well on the Isle of Wight are within 10 feet of him. They expect to recover him dead or alive in the next few hours. And the actor Stacey Keach was released this morning from Reading Jail after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain.
The sports news in brief. The Football Association want to appeal against the worldwide ban imposed on English clubs yesterday, but FIFA say there's no machinery for an appeal. England lost to Italy by 2-1 in a friendly international in Mexico City. The winning goal came from a controversial penalty in the last minute. No play was possible in any of the outstanding Benton and Hedges cricket quarterfinals yesterday. They'll try again today, and they hope for some play too at Woburn, where the Dunhill Masters golf tournament was also rained off.
Well, let's wish all the sports the best of luck today, because in London it's going to be another miserable summer's day, I'm afraid. Dull and wet this morning, slowly drying out during the afternoon, with the clouds breaking just before sunset. It's 8 centigrade, 46 Fahrenheit at the moment, moving to only 12 centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit, as that's the top one today. The wind is moderate northerly, sunset 9:13, and the lights go on at 9:43. Quite a few surprises in store for Bob in the next couple of hours before he finally takes his leave of us at 10 o'clock. But at the moment, let me just tell you that there are very few surprises on the traffic front this morning. You know, I think, about the wet roads. Just a warning to watch out for the spray. It's very, very nasty indeed if you haven't ventured forth yet. And in Clapham, a set of failed traffic lights, Clapham High Street at the junction with Clapham Park Road. It's 12 minutes to 8.
And so then, the world premiere of Klimke's The Burning Fiery Furnace. In the opening aria, Mimi is complaining to her mentor, Grenville, that she is hot. Grenville rejoins that this is only to be expected in a burning fiery furnace. Mimi chastises him and suggests he installs some Toshiba air conditioning. Grenville lets slip that he is not made of money. Mimi informs him that Toshiba mobile air conditioning is not costly, is easy to install, and has a 3-year guarantee. Furthermore, unless he has a unit installed, he will go without his dinner. Granville exits, muttering. It pays to keep cool with Toshiba air conditioning. Dial 100 and ask for free phone Toshiba.
On Family Money this week, we report on the firms who will invest your cash in unit trusts for you. But at a price. Are they worth it? And what are the results? The start of a new series answering listeners' queries, de-jargonising city gobbledygook. This week, Scrip Issues. And our panel of experts solves more listeners' problems. Family Money, after the news at 7, tonight on LBC.
AM time, 11 minutes to 8. The judge heading the Bradford soccer fire inquiry says his probe into the disaster is likely to end sooner than he'd thought. Originally, it had been set down for 3 weeks, but now only vital witnesses are being called. Rob Goldston reports on the first 3 days of the inquiry.
Most of the evidence today will come from firemen and expert witnesses. Yesterday, police officers told how they wrestled through the blaze at the Valley Parade Ground to rescue trapped fans. The police told how they saw people burst into flames, others died in their seats, suffocated by the dense smoke. 22 witnesses were called yesterday, but Mr. Justice Popplewell, who's heading the inquiry, asked that only witnesses with something to add to the investigation be called in future, an indication that he's keen to bring the inquiry to a conclusion well ahead of its scheduled 3 weeks. Among yesterday's witnesses were a group of football fans who were sitting in the row of seats where the fire broke out. One of them, Stephen Wilkinson, told how he managed to escape the blaze through a tuck shop at the back of the stand, but how he then risked his life to help rescue trapped fans. He smashed open a bolted exit door with his bare hands and eventually ripped it off its hinges. Another spectator was plastics expert Cheslor Pacella. He said he smelt burning polystyrene and was almost certain that the fire was started by a cigarette being dropped into a plastic coffee cup, setting fire to rubbish under floorboards. Police Inspector Michael Simpson told the inquiry that vital police radio messages never reached the control because radios became jammed as officers tried to send out distress calls all at once. The inquiry is continuing.
That was Rob Goldston reporting. You're listening to AM at 9 minutes to eight.
As many people, I'm sure, will be aware, but if you're not, I will tell you now that, regrettably, it's Bob's last morning on the AM programme, certainly for some considerable time. And I think, Bob, more than 10 years presenting a major morning news show, as you've done, inevitably means that you've introduced a host of world-shaking events. And we thought it might be quite a nice idea to see if you could remember some of the events which were in the news just 10 years ago this week. Now, as Philip has already mentioned, June the 2nd, 1975, snow fell in London for the first time since reliable records began. On the 5th of June, the Suez Canal was reopened to international shipping after 8 years of closure, and that was a few days after the Israelis decided to pull back further from the canal zone, all this happening, of course, in 1975. And I'm sure you'll remember this one. Here, in this country, we had the results of a referendum which voted 2-1 in favour of entry to the European Economic Community.
As counting officer for Greater London, I declare that the result of this count is yes votes 2,201,031. No votes 1,100,185.
Isn't it incredible the way my mind went blank when you said, what do you remember in news items 10 years ago? Because I can't even remember what happened a fortnight ago. You know, we get through news so fast on this programme.
Yep.
The moment they started talking, I almost remembered the words and the figures he said. It's extraordinary. It all came back with remarkable clarity.
Well, here's another one. Can you remember this? And this is very relevant, of course, to what we do now on LBC. On the 9th of June, 1975, for the very first time, we heard live radio from the House of Commons.
Monday, June the 9th, 1975, a date for the history books.
Order!
And Mr. Order. Speaker...
Mr. Patty.
Calling Mr. Patty the first question.
Mr. Speaker, we intend to do our utmost to see that the shipbuilding and aircraft industries bill is made law in the present session. As I explained to the House on the 17th of March, it would not be appropriate to estimate the costs at this stage because of the large number of unquoted securities to be acquired. Mr. Patty?
Would the Secretary of State not agree that although he has, as usual, neglected to answer the question as far as the cost is concerned,
Well, the very familiar voice of Ed Boyle there, opening that broadcasting in Parliament. It's difficult, Doug, to remember what happened on this exact time 10 years ago, but it's interesting to cast back over 10 years and think of some of the important events which we've covered, events which really have meant the contents of AM being thrown out of the window, the sudden things that have happened while we've been on the air. I think the Balkan Street siege was one of the things, wasn't it? It blew up at that particular time, the London bombings. What else do you remember?
Well, I can remember, as we said on Nightline with Adrian Love on Wednesday night, somebody rang up and asked us this very question, but I'm sure there's a different audience now. And the two things, I think, first of all, John Lennon being assassinated in New York, and that was at 5:20 London time, just before midnight New York time, and of course that was a major news item, and all the programme that we had, which we'd put to bed for the night, so to speak, was thrown out of the window, wasn't it?
Yes, as was the programme when the Pope died.
That's right, and that was, I think, 6:45 during the programme, which was even worse from our point of view, and again we had to get lines live to the Vatican. Very exciting, but of course very, very hard work, especially for the very able production team that we've got here on AM.
Yes, because listeners will never have known that the producer leapt to the telephone, phoned the Vatican, and was on that phone for 20 minutes, phoning, and finally got through, and the person they got through to spoke English, which was marvellous.
That's right. It all appears very easy when it comes onto the programme, and that's the way we'd like it to be. But believe me, there's a tremendous lot goes on behind the scenes, doesn't there?
Hey, Cameron, we've got to get on.
Oh, we must, we must. We can't reminisce all the time, can we?
Heavens above. No. We've got travel after this. It's 7:55.
Alitalia is Italy, with 3 daily flights to Milan, twice daily to Rome, throughout the week to Venice, Pisa, Turin or Bologna, all from Heathrow, all at convenient times. The superbly designed comfortable seats, a choice of great Italian wines with meals, and our in-flight duty-free boutique carrying exclusive top-class Italian merchandise, making Euro Business Alitalia the executive's choice. Alitalia. Elegante Alitalia.
You know Rumbelows is the place for great value deals, and just now they've got an exclusively designed Hoover washing machine, the energy-saving Electron 800. It's not only the design that's exclusive, so is the price. Only £269.99 with £20 off for a trade-in. What's more, there's a free pack of Ariel with any Hoover washing machine you buy, because Hoover know all about Ariel's great low-temperature cleaning. So toddle off down to Rumbelows for a great value wash in a great value machine.
Jane Markham wrenches us back to the present with the road news.
And it's a slow old rush hour. The A1 is carrying heavy traffic, particularly as you approach Stirling Corner and down towards Apex Corner. I'm not too sure of the reason for that at the moment. On Honeypot Lane at the junction with Charlton Road, a burst water main is causing delays today, but the tree I mentioned earlier that had fallen across Peterborough Road at the junction with Lowlands Road in Harrow is in the process of being removed at the moment, so traffic should be back to normal there. Edith Grove, that's slow if you're heading from Fulham Road up towards the King's Road due to parked vehicles, and finally faulty lights on the A3 Clapham High Street at the junction Park Road. Jane Markham, AA Road Watch.
The Northern Line escalators at Kentish Town Station are not working this morning, but that's the only significant flaw in a generally good picture on the Underground this morning. Most bus routes have all their buses on the road, though there may be slow progress where traffic is heavy, especially at that problem spot in Honeypot Lane, Stanmore. Ken Cordner reporting.
At domestic airports and also on the continent, no reports of any difficulties for air travellers. If you're meeting passengers, British Airways arrivals are well to time, with two exceptions, BA236 from Oman landing at 11:20 and BA020 from Peking, Hong Kong and Bahrain, an approximate Heathrow arrival time of 11 o'clock. Air Canada's incoming services are on or close to time. Finally, at Gatwick, British Caledonians' arrivals from the United States are all heading in on schedule. Marie Collette, Air Travel News.
Nothing from British Rail. In the North Sea and the English Channel, winds are moderate northerly. The sea is moderate, and in the rain, the visibility in both sea areas is extremely poor. The currency, the best you're likely to get abroad, the Spanish peseta 219, the French franc 11.54, the Italian lira 2430,
the Greek drachma 169, the Yugoslav dinar 330, and the Portuguese escudo 221. If you're staying at home, we've got a couple of nice ones for you.
Yes, there's a Victorian garden party on at the Grand Hotel, the former home of W.S. Gilbert. It's Old Reading, Harrow Weald, Middlesex. It's on Sunday, and it starts at 2.30, and people are going to turn up in Victorian dress. I shall be there, opening it at 2.30. Hope you will too. Lots of prizes, lots going on. The Victorian garden party, the Grimsdyke Hotel. That's up there in Old Reading, Harrow Weald.
Let's hope the weather improves, and there's a summer fair. Hope it improves for that. It's at 2.15 tomorrow, St. George's Church, Field, Pinnerview, North Harrow.
This is your early morning call from Harrods. On Saturday, you can meet a legend in your lunchtime. Between 1 p.m. and 2, Leonard Bernstein will be in the record department on the second floor of Harrods. He'll be signing copies of his brilliant new recording of West Side Story. Released by Deutsche Grammophon, it features Kirite Kanawa and Jose Carreras and is available on compact disc, record or cassette. So come and meet Leonard Bernstein at Harrods this Saturday, the 8th of June. That was your early morning call from Harrods. Listen again soon.
There's a whale featured in the next hour of AM. We conjecture on the fate of Nemo, and of course we list the Friday executive opportunities in the LBC job scheme. First though, the main sporting news of the day, the world ban on English soccer teams. Patrick Collins from the Mail on Sunday joins us after the news at 8. 97.3 FM, 1152 kHz AM, talking to London, 24 hours a day, LBC.
The 8 o'clock news, this is Douglas Cameron. The actor Stacey Keach, television tough guy detective Mike Hammer, has been released from Reading Jail this morning after serving 6 months of a 9-month sentence for smuggling cocaine into Britain.